Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Tom, if some WWE fans in the past had tuned out of the product over the past 5, 6, 7 years even, or the past couple years, but they thought, hey, there's a new sheriff in town, Ding Dong the Witch is dead, however they look at the departure of Vince McMahon and Paul Levesque in charge, maybe they liked the NXT TakeOver era, the blue and gold era of NXT, and wanted to see if they saw some encouraging signs. Do you think tonight's show had those encouraging signs? And if so, what were they? And are some of those encouraging signs not just the inclusion of things, but also the absence of some other things? What's your take on that?
Yes, absolutely. And if I were to give you the full answer to that off of the top, I wouldn't stop talking for the next 45 minutes. So I'll try to give you the Cliff's Notes just to start. I went into this, you know, getting the invite to be the co-host again and thinking like, oh, cool, you know, SummerSlam fallout and everything. And, you know, yeah, Triple H. But we know that this is going to be slow, and that's the smart thing. You've talked about consistency for the shareholders and whatnot, and I'm all on board with that. So, you know, hey, they're naming the referees. That's cool. They're mentioning former NXT champions a little bit more. Neato. And then I started to see more of a not just more of a focus on the wrestling on a weekly television program. And it's way too early for patterns to be developing. This could just be one show where a statement is trying to be made. But it seemed like Triple H was trying to make a statement with this episode of Raw by telling the talent, go out there and make a statement. And I think while there are many other details to that we can dig into, I think my macro takeaway is that tonight presented a version of Raw that is familiar and recognizable in the contemporary era of WWE, but felt more meaningful. It wasn't just the action in the ring. It was also the significance of the matches and the journeys the characters are on. And it felt sustainable. It didn't, I was starting to get worried, like, okay, but you can't just put everything on the mat every time, because then there's nothing left for main events. There's nothing left for premium live events. You gotta pace yourself, especially with how many hours there are on television every single week. But after watching this 3 hours, at risk of sounding like I'm gushing over someone who I have not held my admiration for as a secret in the past, I felt like tonight's edition of Monday Night Raw presented a sustainable version of a more exciting product.
Some of it, and this struck me about 2 hours and 40 minutes into the show, once it was like clear, the main event is all that's left. I'm not sure what there would be left to complain about. You know, if you're watching this show, what would your complaint be? Not well, here's something I would tweak, but like, what would truly be a complaint? And asked online on Twitter, you know, for suggestions on what people would do differently. And I mean, one person said just, you know, Dominic not in a main event match. And it's like, okay, you know, fair enough. I mean, he's sort of very Mysterio. There's, you know, a storyline there they're doing, but you know, it's still inexperienced, and who knows what his ceiling is. You know, couple spots in this match were kind of like, okay, yeah, that's a reminder. He doesn't have as much ring time as pretty much anybody else on this show. But I'm curious to refresh that question on our Twitter feed at PW Torch and find out what, you know, what people have in mind, because there just wasn't anything on this show that came across as like misogynistic or a scatological humor or an inside joke. Even taking into some of my criticisms of AEW, nothing felt like Clubhouse or Too Cool for School or show your club card before you can watch this show or we're going to talk over your head. None of that stuff was on display here. It was like, so one of the positives is they were getting the most out of the talent that they had, presenting them with their best foot forward, framing them in a way where if you were their fan, you'd go, yeah, do this with them. This is what I've been wanting. But it's also just the absence of irritation. And I think that could end up being maybe I don't want to say the biggest difference because it's just way too early to say that. The biggest early difference and the one you can most easily do and not like set off alarms that, oh, without Vince McMahon, things are so different and it's risky. If you just edit out three or four things in commentary or a vignette or a skit or an act or how somebody is instructed to act, you just edit that stuff out. It just suddenly people are just able to enjoy good wrestlers doing good wrestling and promos. Tom.
I absolutely agree. I think that a lot of what WWE has continued to be doing in recent years has really worked on that level, but it is held back by just those little details. And I'm someone who has tried to see the positives in the way that Vince crafted WWE over the years, because I feel, and we've discussed before, how I feel the key thing that Vince was trying to accomplish was keeping wrestling mainstream as opposed to falling into being a niche thing. And outside of WWE, it pretty much has just become a niche thing. WWE remains mainstream. It's keeping its head above water, even with dwindling numbers anyway. But that did result in a lot of these oddities that, we've listed again and again over the years. And those little things do detract. It's just sort of chipping away at a nice statue, I suppose, is the metaphor that's coming to mind. And those do just sort of ache in your mind as you're watching the show. And tonight, again, much more swiftly than I was expecting, and we'll see what the consistency is moving forward or if there's an increase in the rate, cleared a lot of that up.
Tom G on Twitter said, I returned last week after a lengthy absence, and I'm absolutely sticking around. Someone else said, giving purpose and history to the U.S. title was fantastic, a small but promising sign. That was AFL3 on Twitter. Chris Weber on Twitter said, it's not must-see TV yet, but it's worth tuning in to see where it's going. The major criticisms or critiques, I guess, suggestion box, is more related to Kevin Dunn, I think, than Triple H, and that is the camera, the rapid camera cutaways. And, it doesn't bother me a ton. I guess part of it is I watch wrestling with my laptop typing up a report, and sometimes I'm not noticing that. I'm tuned into commentary, but my eye might be off the screen more than the average viewer at strategic times. And I think that also that happens to come when they're doing like these rapid cutaway shots during, just a brawl that's just going to be a brawl. And I watched that a little closer tonight, looking to see if a common complaint was not there and if they had done away with that or changed that. And I noticed it more than usual tonight because I was looking for it. And that is something I think that would be a positive to edit out. In fact, All Things Scott One on Twitter said, I can't watch this product until the rapid camera cuts go away for good. Rennie Hale said, stop shaking the camera, such as at the end of the Bianca Sky match. I do like the new high overhead boom wide camera shots and angles. That definitely gave a big time feel to things. Other things we'll get into, Ciampa, getting his push. A lot of NXT talent on the show that I'm very interested in getting Tom's take on. In fact, let's pause here and introduce ourselves and then shift into some comments on how the NXT talent is being utilized, and also, of course, invite our callers, phone calls, and we'll get to some emails too as the show progresses. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 1st, 2022. Tom, I can feel it. It's SummerSlam season. We're into August.
Yes, I had it on this weekend, and my family was very confused.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. It's like literally, it's August 1st. I'm like, oh, all right, SummerSlam's coming up. And I'm like, oh, wait, it was just a couple days ago. So anyway, yeah, this is a post show covering Raw. This is the first episode of the Paul Levesque era unless you count the show that was written largely before he got hired, and he only had a few hours' notice last week. But this first episode of Raw, that where things aren't just set. Obviously, there's inertia from a lot of Vince McMahon booking decisions. And you know, it's going to take a while to steer the ship in different directions. He didn't blow things up, but it is an interesting show to look at and analyze, as it really is the first show that Paul Levesque had any time to prepare for and write. And he also gets to give hints about what the course will be post-SummerSlam. Last week's job, get people to watch SummerSlam. That's a lineup Vince McMahon came up with. This week, what's his vision and what's his approach? The other voice you – oh, did I say my name? I'm Wade Keller, by the way. Host of the program, editor, publisher, founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I host a bunch of podcasts during the week, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, including the Flagship Edition. We'll have Todd Martin on as the guest co-host on Thursday this week, so look for that. And I also host post-pay-per-view roundtables, post-PLE roundtables in the case of WWE. And Rich Van and Todd Martin join me Saturday night for about 70 minutes to analyze SummerSlam. That is a VIP exclusive. It's always a real fun conversation, and one of the things I look forward to a couple times a month when there's however often there are pay-per-views. I always look forward to those, and I think VIP members do too. Plus, I host The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Van, Wade Keller Hotlines, and more. So go VIP, everybody. pwtorch.com/goVIP. Now, the other voice you hear, the Tom I keep referencing, is Tom Staupe, from formerly of the PWT Talks NXT weekly podcast, and now host of Bonus Point, a VIP exclusive show, and NXT 8 years back with Kelly Wells. Tom, it is just a perfect timing to have you on, because we're seeing Triple H. He's so familiar with this whole generation of wrestlers who he's been promoting and watching closely in NXT. So I'm excited to get your take on the former Io Shirai, Dakota Kai, Tommaso Ciampa, on, and the NXT influences that you might already be noticing. But first things first, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, good night to be on. like I said, like I indicated, the biggest surprise to me here is just how much was notable on this first show after SummerSlam. Been tracking Triple H's NXT for a very long time, and you can follow the retrospective, the 8-year retrospective on NXT 8 years back. We are currently in, 8 years to the day is when the episodes drop, from when our analysis drops on VIP, from when the episodes we're talking about aired, and we are currently in the build-up to TakeOver Fatal 4-Way, which is the third special event that NXT put on, special live event, but the second one that had the TakeOver branding. Charlotte Flair is the NXT champion right now. Adrian Neville is the NXT champion right now. The Ascension are winding down their tag run, so cool stuff. Tyler Breeze on the rise. Really, really fun stuff to cover there. And then bonus point, if you are interested in the earliest phases of WWE's developmental, as Triple H obviously is, and we got that tryout video out of Nashville tonight, I am doing my best to cover that on Bonus Point. It's monthly. It's usually a brief podcast, and I'm trying to dig. The info is tough to find some months, as it was for the July episode, but I'm covering in the recent episode, Sol Ruka's level up debut, Hank Walker's level up debut, and some really interesting comments from William Regal on his new podcast about why WWE has been focusing more on college athletes than independent wrestlers.
Awesome. Well, go VIP, everybody. There's such a great variety of shows. You're just not going to find out there. I mean, for so many reasons, when you just subscribe free to a bunch of podcasts that are out there. I'm really proud of our lineup of PW Torch daily casts, but also our VIP exclusives. And some of them range in niche areas. And we are proud to bring that to you. And Tom, it is absolutely a fascinating niche. And if you want to stay ahead of the curve in terms of, impressing your friends and people online with knowledge of who's coming up and who's looking good, and what the pipeline looks like, well, you have one real good option in front of you. Go VIP and check out Tom's podcast. Tom, let's get to it. I want to give out phone numbers here and in the email. Give us a call. Our number, our open phone lines right now, if you're live streaming our show at about 11:20 Eastern, following Raw here, 347-215 8558. That's 347-215-8558. I suspect we've got some people coming back to the show who, you know, stopped watching Raw, or people who are actually watching Raw instead of just listening to our show, because we know we hear from people who are like, I keep up on WWE through listening to your podcast, Wade, but I don't really make time to watch the product. If you're watching the product now, whether you've been listening to the show or you're just coming back to the show, we'd love to hear from you. If not this week, make a point on Friday or Monday to live stream our show after SmackDown and Raw end, and join the conversation. And we'd love to get some different voices from people, especially the disgruntled, lapsed WWE fans who are hearing about Paul Levesque, Triple H taking over, and are curious to see what's happening. Really interested to get your point of view. We might have a couple of those people calling on this show also. We also have a segment with PW Torch VIP contributor Javier Machado coming up later. We'll do a roundtable with him. But again, our number 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. One email we'll get to later. Subject line, new era. Really enjoyed the show tonight. I couldn't find a minute to walk away. So we'll read that full email later in the show. But first things first, Tom, let's start bringing callers into the conversation and hear what people say. I'm seeing some area codes pop up we haven't seen in a while, some phone numbers pop up, and that is encouraging. We'll start today's caller portion with Rob from Atlanta. Rob, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing tonight?
Good. It's you know, a more exciting time than usual to be following WWE, especially.
Yeah. So, I am one of those lapsed fans that you guys were talking about. I'm not quite disgruntled, but I think the last time I was really, really, really into the product was probably 2016 when SmackDown was at its peak, I guess. Also want to start off saying that you guys are probably like my favorite wrestling podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts to get different opinions and views on the product. And a lot of the ones that I've come across over the last couple of years, they just do a lot of screaming and hollering and cursing, and they don't really give an in-depth, comprehensive review. So anyway, I wanted to give you guys your flowers.
Well, thank you. I mean, we're not counter-programming that, but I'm proud that we are naturally different than that. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, yeah, with the show tonight, I really noticed a big difference. It kept me entertained. A lot of the Raws that I've watched over the last, I would say, the last 6 or 7 months, even longer than that, I tend to turn away. Things move slowly. There's no continuation of storylines, per se. But tonight, I'm not going to be overzealous to say that it felt like a fresh start, because a lot of people get trapped into that whole idea of, oh, it's so much better with Triple H and this and that and third, because it's still early in the process or whatever. But enough rambling. With that being said, I thought tonight's continuation of different storylines and conflicts is what really stood out. So often I've seen things start in the ring.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry, Rob, you faded for about 5 seconds there. So that's why I was talking.
Oh, okay.
I'm not
sure
whose internet that was. But go ahead.
Yeah, I apologize.
No, probably not your fault.
I was going to say it's like so often they seem to start conflicts in the ring, and then with Vince McMahon's booking, they kind of like they don't go back to it throughout the show. And I feel like tonight was really refreshing, especially with the women. I want to start off talking about the women, and I feel like, you know, your other caller that calls in quite frequently, Kyle, he always talks about Bianca being Belair and Becky and how Bianca seems to be stagnant, but I think tonight was a good turn in the right direction for Bianca's character. She has a little bit more depth, and I really thought my first initial reaction was, oh, she's now that she's got Becky Lynch's respect, she's kind of the matriarch, if you will, of the women's division, where she's kind of like the gatekeeper and she's kind of the protector of the other baby faces, as evidenced by her, you know, coming to the aid of Alexa and Lord, I'm having a brain fart because I'm drinking wine.
Asuka?
Yeah, Asuka, sorry. So anyway, I felt like Bianca kind of made a turn in the right direction as far as her character goes. And as far as a continuation, I like how Bayley came out to confront her last night at Saturday at SummerSlam. And then tonight they continue on with their storyline. And it seemed like before Bianca was stale because she didn't really have any backup. She would always get in these conflicts and nobody would come out to help her. So anyway, I like the direction of the women right now. You have so many possibilities with these six women with matchups. So I'm assuming at some point in time we're going to get a six-woman tag, which is fine. I also like the continuation with Edge after he came out at SummerSlam and then he continued on tonight. What else stood out for me tonight that was really good was Ciampa. And I think that was the right booking decision. Now, initially I thought, wow, they're heating Ciampa up really quickly. But when you look at the overall like dynamic of Ciampa and Miz and him being kind of Miz's bodyguard flunky, I almost want to say that they're preparing Ciampa for a long-term face turn, starting with his work in the ring to try to get him over. Because most of the fans, they know Ciampa and they know how good he is. But on the main roster, he's been stagnant. And he's been held back. So I feel like now they're starting to see, I don't know if I'm not going to, you know, attribute it to Triple H's vision, but I will attribute it to a new creative process. I really am feeling this whole Ciampa push. So what do you guys think? My first question is, how do you think that Ciampa is going to fare as a mid-card, upper mid-card kind of, especially if they put the U.S. title on him, which I don't know if that's going to happen right away. But if they do, let's just say, if they do put the strap on him, how do you think he's going to fare as a upper mid-card heel with the rub from The Miz? Do you think that he really needs The Miz? And that's my first point.
Yep.
Question.
Yeah. Tommaso Ciampa, a Triple H favorite. It was, you know, when we were having conversations about who's going to benefit from Paul Levesque taking over for Vince McMahon, Tommaso Ciampa is high on, I think, everybody's list to bring up. And it was an accurate prediction. This was a clear shift towards Ciampa, believing in Ciampa and featuring him more, not just in the outcome of his match, but the length of his matches, I should say, and how the announcers talked about him, the investment in talking about his backstory. Tell me your thoughts on Ciampa from his NXT days and how you have felt about how he was used up until now, Tom. And then, of course, you know, go to what you saw tonight and if you're encouraged or still on guard.
Yeah, Ciampa is I've told Ciampa to his face that I think he's one of the best in-ring storytellers, or just one of the best storytellers that contemporary wrestling has. And he is an exemplar of something that I think we can probably – I mean, we'll see that national television and a major product like this presents different challenges. So we'll see what carries over while also trying to prevent myself from tangenting off onto a different subject. So much of NXT was by design modeled after the main roster product. So some things that NXT did were Vince-isms on purpose. So we can't attribute every single thing in NXT to Triple H's vision. He was trying to make the call-up process more seamless in that regard, but Ciampa is an exemplar, in my opinion, of Triple H's penchant for long-term storytelling. His development of as a character, I mean, even now on the main roster, it's been consistent ever since the beginning, before he even had an NXT contract, and he was just showing up to do jobs in a tag team with Johnny Gargano. He's the same guy, and it's just been one long, consistent storyline the whole way through, with the one hiccup being the brief call-up that didn't pan out that you know, a lot of us have just – I just had to remind myself of it. I forgot that it happened when he was teaming with Gargano again, even though the two of them were feuding on NXT. So Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree that it's easy agree that Ciampa and also Rhea Ripley are like Triple H's children, basically. So they are the first two that come to mind as people who will benefit from him calling the creative shots and being head of talent relations. But the other two that come to mind for me right away are Shayna Baszler and Ricochet, but those may be more more subjective choices. But I do believe they are Triple H darlings, and so many of the people on the roster now have come up through the NXT system. But Ciampa is a guy who, no matter how incredible he is in the ring, and in his latter NXT days, I became critical of him for perpetrating what I was talking about at the top of the show, is that he would do everything he possibly could and move at hyper fast speeds in every single match, no matter what the spot was. And he wouldn't save anything for the big events. So every match felt the same. And that's like, if he's given the freedom to prove himself, he will go all the way. But most importantly, he is a guy who, no matter what his look is, he's in incredible shape, but he's not the biggest guy. He's not the tallest guy. And the shaved head, big graying beard is definitely a look that may not scream mainstream, but he's a guy where when you get him on the mic, whether he's in a top program in NXT coming off of a hot angle or going into a hot angle, or whether he's on a .com exclusive standing next to The Miz, he makes the absolute most of it and finds a genuine, passionate way to frame where he's at and where he wants to go and why. And so he can talk himself into significant positions, and that's one of the reasons why I believe in him. And yeah, last time I was on with you, I was saying, yeah, I don't love this for Ciampa being in this Miz situation. I wasn't upset about it. It was what it was in Vince's WWE, and I you know, saw that, and it was just like, hey, you know, Ciampa was a guy who wanted to be an NXT lifer. He's making a bigger paycheck. Good for him. He's backing up the Miz. Okay, you know, I'll take it. Could have been worse. But even before Triple H got this position, he was really just grasping the reins of this Miz thing. And now, under Triple H, he has gotten consistent mic time, show after show. And now, just like Rob observed, they're already planting the seeds of the Miz feud. Miz is jealous of Ciampa winning when he lost. Miz is taking little digs like, oh, well, you know, I'll help Ciampa even though he didn't help me at SummerSlam. And Miz, I loved this. He's saying that he'll make Ciampa a star, and that right there is deliberately designed. That was scripted to get under the skin of people like us who know who Ciampa is, the exact same way that 10 years ago The Miz was counseling Daniel Bryan on the original incarnation of NXT, and it upset so many people. Like, you got to be kidding me. The Miz is supposed to be the pro to rookie Daniel Bryan. This is ridiculous. And it was a storyline that worked and it had a second life on SmackDown when the two of them feuded again. So I love the framing of it. And yeah, giving Ciampa two matches on the show, both of which were, the second of which was grueling, the first of which he really had to earn. The second of which sure wasn't clean and is leading to, I believe, a United States title loss that will play into what will become the Miz feud. Whether that explodes right away or whether it's just another seed planted, you know, time will tell. But taking someone who was just backup, pretty much just someone who was in a position to put some extra heat on, try to get more people to cheer Logan Paul is really the position Ciampa was in. Doing this in one show, I think it was important to put him in a position where he had to earn it. And when you tell Ciampa to go out and earn it, that is exactly what he's going to do. If somebody watching didn't notice anything else different about the show tonight, you noticed the difference in presentation for Ciampa.
And I think part of why Ciampa fits with the Paul Levesque vision of Raw and SmackDown or pro wrestling in general is you don't need to decide what Ciampa is. Like Vince McMahon looks at someone and goes, well, what are you? What's the short phrase I'm going to use about you? And how old are you and how many injuries do you have and how tall are you? Hunter's going to look and go, this is a guy that I can use right now and I can use him in, you know, a second tier gatekeeper role where everyone knows he's going to give you a good promo and a really good effort and a good match. He's good enough. Dominic gives good efforts, you know, but it's a good effort. And a lot of people are skilled, but don't give a good effort. Ciampa does both, as you said, maybe sometimes to a fault. But it doesn't matter with Hunter, I don't think. Yes, in NXT, he was trying to produce stars that Vince McMahon would promote and accept and embrace, actually. Now he can, you know, meander away. It might take a while to whatever it turns out his vision is. And I think that does incorporate valuing somebody who's just intense and believable and compelling to watch as a pro wrestler, not as a sports entertainment, boil it down to two or three word character. And it's going to be interesting to watch. I thought it was real smart use of Ciampa, perhaps short of the interference finish, if Hunter's looking to kind of make a statement about, you know, moving away from that, especially when there were two no contests earlier in the show. We'll cover that, I think, in other parts of the show as we go here. Want to throw back to Rob for any follow-up before we move on to some of our other callers. Go ahead, Rob.
Dude, those were great points, man. I really appreciate that. I like that when you said that sometimes you got to use talent right now. Like, I understand long-term booking and storytelling, but sometimes you just need a body, a seat filler right now. And I feel like Ciampa's talented enough that he can be inserted into that upper mid-card role. Now, the follow-up I have to that is, as far as the long-term booking and the storytelling about the face turn, do you think there's going to be any interference or any unintentional interference in the match against Lashley from The Miz? Or do you think it's just going to be a straightforward, you know, Miz is jealous, as Todd brought up. Miz gets jealous of Ciampa's success and placement. Or do you think it's going to be a little bit longer, drawn-out process of the split between him and Miz?
Good question. And Tom, have they done enough to establish why Ciampa would even associate with Miz? Or why would the Ciampa personality want to align with Miz? Has that been well enough established? And if they wait too long, does it undercut at the core what might make Ciampa a popular, scrappy, second-tier, intense, can beat anyone on any given night, member of the Raw roster?
Yes and no. If you're a person who gobbles up every little second of WWE that you can get, then you've seen that, because that was the, you know, .com exclusive Ciampa cutting a fiery promo as to exactly why he's aligned himself with The Miz. But even in, you know, the Vince years, we would see some of the best promo work done as .com social media exclusives, and it doesn't make the air. So most audience members have not seen that. He's still just kind of a guy who was, if you even remembered him randomly interfering in other stuff, who eventually showed up to help The Miz, and it hasn't really been explained all that well. So I think they're still in a position where they can do that. And as far as how the Bobby Lashley match goes, I would imagine it. I mean, this probably isn't going to happen, but if Monday Night Raw kicks off next week and Ciampa comes out and the roof blows off the place, then maybe they'll accelerate things a bit. In that regard, I could absolutely see the jealousy thing if Ciampa wins the belt. But I think where we might be at is maybe a blown interference situation. Maybe the ref notices the interference and throws the match out, or I don't know. I'd have to think that one through a little bit better to come up with something that really suits the story. But I think it'll be The Miz still trying to help Ciampa, but in essence, it's holding Ciampa back.
Yeah, yeah. And I think people would enjoy seeing Ciampa turn on Miz. Now, that could mean they glom Ciampa's popularity. They have Logan Paul try to glom off of Ciampa's street cred, so to speak. But, you know, Ciampa can really get over if he just ends up knocking out Logan Paul, and he can make some money with heel Logan Paul against babyface Ciampa if we look towards, like, WrestleMania, if the story arc were to take that long. Anyway. We'll keep rolling here. As I said, we're very much inviting people we don't normally hear from, especially people checking out this show for the first time tonight. If you, like the vast majority of people, download the show and listen later because you've got to get to sleep or you unwind with other things after Raw, please, again, consider yourself formally invited for either Friday SmackDown or next Monday's Raw and beyond to let us know what you think of the product. Rob, I appreciate the call, and I thank you for kicking off the show with some good topics there.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm going to call more often. I really had a good time calling on Friday when I was at Go Home SmackDown. So, yeah, I really appreciate you guys. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your kind words, too. All right. We had a 605, which was a new caller. They dropped off, but we have a 713, who's also a new caller. We'll also have Ed and Sergio on deck coming up. 713, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Jarvis from you.
Hey, John. Good to hear from you. Did you attend tonight?
I did. I was on the I was at the show tonight. I don't know if you have an on-site correspondent, but I can give you some insight to that.
Yeah, we didn't have anyone planned, so it's great and perfect to hear from you.
Perfect. Yeah, it was a great show. I typically go when they're in Houston, but. You know, it's been hit or miss, but this one, you know, it was great from the start, and you never felt like everything had a purpose. So it feels good when everything has a purpose. There was no filler; it was everything was setting up something. I really like the way Bayley and those girls are featured, and almost like a female version of the Shield or something. It feels great, and I hope Triple H keeps the intensity with this because this is a great show.
It felt like this would have been a show that from a live fan experience would have been better than what we have been seeing over the past year, just to grab a random time frame with the ring entrance followed by a long delay, followed by then the bell ringing and then a short match followed by some sort of, you know, skit or something like that. How did it feel just as a live show experience for you, maybe compared to what you were anticipating when you bought the ticket or before the news came out of Polivac taking over?
Yeah. You know, well, being that it was coming off of SummerSlam, I was hoping that it would be a decent show. So that was why I got the tickets right away. But yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal show. It definitely beat, you know, my expectation. You know, especially knowing that you're not getting like Roman Reigns is going to be on there or Brock's not going to be on there. You didn't miss them because they did such a great job featuring who they featured.
Tell us about the crowd response to the show. Who got the biggest responses, and if there were any surprises, either because they were more or less intense than you expected?
Well, I was in the merchandise line, and I noticed a lot of people were buying Cody merch. And so once I got into the actual arena, I noticed they they had the video packages. The crowd was popping for Cody every time Cody's picture came up. So the crowd's really – really big for Cody, like even knowing he's not going to be there, like they were big for him. I would say one of the biggest reactions that was actually surprising for me was Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio got a monster pop when he came out at the end for the main event. You know, they were popping for everybody. I mean, this was an excited crowd. So, I mean, Seth Rollins came out, they were popping for Seth. Edge, they popped for Edge. I mean, they were excited for this show, and I think the pacing helped with that. You know, Becky came out first. They were excited to see her. She cuts the promo and, you know, pretty much turning back into the man, and they were digging that. Then Bianca comes out. They were digging that. So, you know, everybody, they were into everything. I think because it had a purpose, everybody got the pop they deserved.
Tom, do you have a question for John, our outside correspondent.
John, are you sure you knew where you were? What's that? Okay, well, my joke was going to be, are you sure you knew where you were? Because no one at the top of the show said, welcome to Monday Night Raw, as we've heard week after week for so long. But really, I want to follow up on our prior topic, and you said everybody was getting the reaction they deserved, specifically about Ciampa. How was the reaction to Ciampa both initially and as the show went on, as he made multiple appearances and did a lot of work?
Good question.
So he initially got heel heat. He initially got good heel heat. But when he went over on AJ Styles, the crowd went crazy. Like, they were like, oh, wow. Like, they're pushing this. I think the crowd had clicked that, like, they're actually going to push this guy. So he got a nice reaction when he actually got the 1-2-3 over AJ.
Go ahead, Tom.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you mentioned Bayley. We've been waiting for over a year for Bayley to finally come back. I guess you may have answered it as far as feeling like everybody got the reaction they deserved. But do you feel that? I guess more specifically, do you feel that she got the reaction she's going for? Because we're all real excited to see Bayley again. And there's some added excitement with the NXT people she's brought with her. But do you feel that she got the heel reaction she was going for?
It was a mixed bag, to be honest. But, again, we're so excited to see her because it's been a year and a half. So, of course, you know, you're going to possibly see her initially. But, you know, as they settle in, like, you know, she got a lot of heat. Or the whole group got a lot of heat when they did the backstage angle with Becky, beating Becky down. So they got that heat there. But, you know, you still kind of pop when you see her because, I mean, she's that star that we've been missing for that year and a half. And they're doing something really awesome with her, it appears.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be excited to see her as well. I'll finish up with... regarding both Becky and Edge, two people who last we saw them were heels and are now out there explaining themselves, was there a single person that you could detect who still wanted to boo them? I feel like we've wanted to cheer these people for so long, and it's I imagine that they're right there. But what did you see?
No, it was I kind of thought the promos were a little corny, if you will, because, you know, they're, oh, I wasn't in my right mind type of situation. Like, all of a sudden it clicked, especially for Edge, who, you know, had this almost Undertaker-esque entrance at WrestleMania, being this dark character. And then, you know, Saturday night, he's standing next to the Mysterios, and now he's explaining, like, he's coming back to his senses and all. It's a little corny, but, like, the team, the crowd was very receptive to both promos. They got claps, they got applause. So the crowd was just excited. So it was hard to see the crowd not react to anything the way that Paul Levesque wrote that show.
John, did anything happen that you were there in time for before Raw went on the air? And then was anything advertised? And did anything happen after Raw went off the air?
Yes, so they did a main event taping. There was a can I put spoilers out there or what?
Yeah, just let people know if they, you know, don't want spoilers for main event, then fast forward a minute.
Okay, so you had Almost versus Ezekiel. Almost went over. Actually, not too bad of a match. And then you had T-Bar versus Shelton Benjamin. That was okay for what it was. T-Bar went over. So advertised was Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes, even up until, like, last week, knowing that Cody Rhodes is going to be out. So still, obviously, we didn't get that. We didn't get much afterwards either. We pretty much just got Rey Mysterio kind of you know, waving to the crowd. He's really over in Houston because we have a big Hispanic population, so he's really over in Houston. So, you know, he kind of waved to the crowd and everything. And after that, they were like, hey, guys, it's been nice seeing you guys in Houston. We'll be back soon. That was it.
One other thing from the actual show Raw is, did Montez Ford to you come across as somebody that you could see as a top tier single star based on your observations and how the crowd received him tonight in a showcase one-on-one match with Seth?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was actually a point I wanted to bring up, but we got into the other conversations. But yes, Montez came across as a star the entire way. The crowd was into him. I don't think initially, like, because they were in the Seth too. Again, the crowd was into everything. But I think him having that match with Seth and so much back and forth and some near falls really got him, like, shows like, hey, this guy is a star. You know, he had that match with Roman a few months back, or probably, I guess, almost a year ago now. But, like, he can hold his own with these top-tier superstars that have main evented WrestleManias before, and he can hold his own. So, you know, the friend I was with tonight, we were kind of having that discussion, and, you know, we were both like, hey, he's the Shawn Michaels of this group. What's going to happen to Dawkins? And my friend was like, you know, I don't think Dawkins is going to fall into that Marty Jannetty. I think Dawkins, we think they need to turn Dawkins heel and not Montez to give Dawkins that, because Montez is already kind of built. You know, WWE does so much better building heels as stars. So I think he would need that heel rub, as to where I think Montez is a made man.
Tom, is there anything else you want to bring up?
No, I think that covers it for me.
So, yeah, is there anything else, John, you want to add from your experience tonight at the event?
No, my name is Jarvis. I'm sure it was muffled earlier.
Oh,
my name is
it
Jarvis,
was. Yeah,
not John. I called a couple times before, but no, it was. It's just refreshing. I'm hoping that that Triple H continues to move with this level of urgency around the product and getting the product to where, you know, us fans that have been dying for a decent product get that product. I can call the show more often and have some dialogue with you guys.
It would be great. I mean, we'd love to hear from some new voices and to hear from people who were turned off or frustrated or disgruntled and now are making it a staple to watch Raw and also make it a tradition to listen to our live stream afterwards and be part of the conversation. Jarvis, I will edit your name in everywhere I said John, Jarvis, Jarvis, Jarvis. There, now I've recorded a few. They won't all sound the same, and I will splice them in. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Yep, you bet, you bet. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, just like Jarvis was, you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And put in the subject line the name of the city and the date of the show, and I'll be in touch and line up that your appearance to make sure that we're looking for you. We'd love to hear from people who are in the building. It's always fun to hear insights from in the crowd that might be different or just confirm things that we think we see on TV. And, of course, the off-air notes are always fun. All right, so our phone lines are still open. You can call if you're listening to us live here, 347-215-8558, and push 1 when you call on your keypad. That will flag you on our switchboard. You can also participate in our Twitter poll at The Wade Keller, where we asked, what is your suggestion after watching tonight's show? What would you do differently? What would you do more of or less of or tweak? And we'll read more of those responses as the show progresses here. And you can still email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Emails are still coming in. All right, we'll go to Sergio in Connecticut and then Edward in High Desert, California. You are on deck. Sergio, thank you for calling. Good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
What's going on, guys? I'm definitely one of those fans that you've been encouraging to call in, people who haven't been regular viewers of the WWE product in general. Like, I was at AEW this past Wednesday. The last year and some change, wrestling viewing has been pretty much all AEW, and just keeping up with the WWE product through the Torch, really. The Torch, the post shows and all that stuff. But as soon as Triple H took control, like, man, it breathes some life and it makes you, like, hopeful. It's like, oh, let's check it out. You know, it gives you a reason to check it out because, like, even listening to the Torch, it's like, sometimes I felt like, I'm like, man, did Wade just play the same episode from last week? Because they're talking about the same stuff. Like, this is the same stuff that happened last week. It was infuriating sometimes because I would even, like, if I heard something interesting, I would go back on my DVR and watch it. Like, oh, they talked about that. That sounded interesting. It got to a point where that wasn't even an option. Like, I wasn't even going back and watching stuff. I was like, oh, they had a good conversation. That's good enough for me. I could imagine it in my head. But this whole Triple H thing, man, there's just so many little changes, too, like exciting. I feel like something as little as last week when Alexa Bliss was just looking at the camera and said, I'm coming for the title, you know. I know she wouldn't have done that a few weeks ago. And I don't know why, but, like, little things intrigue me, like when the Usos and Bayley's new group just passed each other in the hall.
Yeah.
And were just, like,
very,
they had, like,
very,
a small interaction.
It was very performance center-like.
It makes the show feel like it's a living, breathing thing and not just like a bunch of robots that they're just playing, like, you know, picking each wrestler who's next, like a video game almost. That really puts a little more character into the show. And I was just really into it. And especially I'm really encouraged for Bianca because I love Bianca. I love her in the ring. And I think she's awesome. But I did tune in last week because, you know, that was Triple H's first week. What, not crazy expectations, but that promo Bianca gave last week was so robotic. And she said EST like 20 times, and she came across as so unlikable. And just a week later, it felt like she had a little more leeway to show a little more emotion. And I was just, you know, relieved that she didn't sound like a robot saying EST 50 times, you know. Like, I was really relieved for that. What did you guys think of Bianca and Becky's promo in the beginning of the show?
Tom, go ahead first.
Yeah, I mean, just picking up quickly on the anti-roboticism. Is that a word? Just like Wade said, little things. I mean, when the Bayley's group attacked Becky backstage and they cut to a clip of it, or they cut to the live shot of it, the camera was not in position at first because it didn't, the camera person did not know that was about to happen and they had to go find it. And it was so rare to see that previously. So little things like that. While Bianca was in the ring seeming very much indeed like the caller Rob pointed out, like the new matriarch, I really enjoyed the interaction between Becky and Bianca and how it benefited both of them. Becky reframing herself and readopting the persona of the man and invoking that verbiage, but not going as far as to redub herself that. And it was Bianca who came in and told her, you're the man again, and kind of gave her permission to be that again now and not just claim it for herself. And they each learned from each other and grew from each other, and then Becky saying, all right, hold it down, I'll be coming back. And that's Bianca, somebody who I admittedly I have been a defender of, even when she is very extra and saying EST all the time. I just think she oozes talent and charisma. The more grounded BB is definitely appealing and feels like a real human being and somebody who you want to be along for the ride with. So yes, I agree with the compliments.
I like the idea of Bianca interacting with Becky in a way that feels like you're just catching them while they're, I don't know, standing by waiting for their bags at the airport to be, you know, picked up. Like, I want more authenticity to the conversation and the chemistry. And we got a glimpse of that, and I think there was a comfort level that Bianca had with Becky. You know, they dropped the veneer of hating each other, but they had the backstory to explain why. And it felt like a step in the right direction for Belair. And my criticism of Belair kind of rolling with, I think, sort of the tweener-like skipping, prancing, twirling ring entrance. I feel like that's unbecoming for somebody in their 30s. And it seems like I'm watching an adult play to like a Disney Junior audience or Disney Channel audience or something. And I feel so, I think so highly of her. I don't think anybody who's a fan of her should settle for that being how she continues to be portrayed. It's just very, very cardboard, very video game entrance. Speaking of video games, like it just programmed in, and I hope, and I felt like tonight felt a little different. And in a way, maybe I'm just projecting or looking for it, but it felt like it was a little bit less of that. I even felt Liv Morgan at SummerSlam did a little bit less of the jiggling her stuff for the guys and then acting like, oh, did I just do that, everybody? And it's just, I just roll my eyes at that. It feels like she's been instructed to do it. Again, sort of undignified and video game like. And she was more of a professional athlete coming out as a proud champion, but still an underdog, portraying her personality without the jiggle and the aw shucks thing that just felt either phony or, like I said, undignified. So if we're picking up on some of these clues, I think we're going to see a women's division that is more compelling with more multidimensional, grounded, authentic-seeming personalities. And, I mean, it should be across the board, but the women in particular needed it, and I think Vince McMahon was especially ill-equipped to execute that vision. And I think Triple H, because he's worked with them and he knows them, like, and he's known them a while, is going to really help. And so, you know, hopes are high, and early indications are I think they're heading in the right direction, some of this stuff. Sergio, I'll throw back
yeah.
to you.
Yeah, honestly, I was worried. Man, I was so worried about the women's division. I want to say as short as 2 months ago, like, AEW has an okay women's division, but the one thing I do come to WWE for is, like, their women's talent is just, like, top tier. And, like, when I heard, like, John Laurinaitis was in charge again of, like, picking women, like, I remember the John Laurinaitis era of the Divas champions and grabbing the models and teaching them how to wrestle. I'm like, my goodness, like, is this what we're going to go back to? And I was honestly, I was dreading it because I love women's wrestling. I love when they're treated as serious athletes. I love Bianca, everything about it. So I was super nervous. But, like, as soon as Triple H takes over, it's like it feels like a refocusing on the women's division. We're bringing back Bayley, giving her a group. And I don't know, it just – it feels like, okay, here we go again. Like the women, because Triple H has always felt like he's been, you know, a proponent of the women's division since the early days of NXT, which is what caught my eye so early on. So I'm just looking forward to where the women's division is in the next couple months after. Before that, I was terrified that we were heading backwards. But the last point I'll make, and I'll let you guys go, is the U.S. title. And I really like the video package. I really like them talking about champions of the past. And I was wondering if you guys think that, and I think you could pretty much say yeah, if we could expect the same thing for the IC title on SmackDown with Gunther. I love Gunther. I love his aesthetic. I mostly love his presentation. It's a little too cartoony, but, you know, maybe we could, you know, file some of those edges, make them a little more grittier. And great. But do you guys think the IC title will get a similar presentation to what the U.S. title got tonight on Friday? And I really hope it does. And I'll let you guys go with that. I'm excited, and I'm ready to jump back into the WWE product and hopefully call in a few more every once in a while.
That's great. Thanks, Sergio. Great comments, great call. Yeah, Tom, I mean, in a way, I feel like if they do it for the IC title, it almost feel like it might take something away from what they did for the U.S. title tonight because it'll feel too samey. I'd almost rather they kind of come up with a different way to express it, the importance of the IC title. And I think there's creative ways to do it. Like, I mean, I'm totally spitballing here, but instead of a video package showing all the IC champs of the past where it feels too samey, maybe make it more of an ongoing thing where there's an Intercontinental title fact of the week, where you take a this month in history moment and you show a little clip, or you throw an interesting stat about IC title holders and the length that they held the belt, or who was an IC champ who then went on to become a world champ. Like just little facts that bring the title's history into focus, but different than just a video package. So again, there's probably plenty of other ways to go about it, having more wrestlers talk about aspiring to be IC champ someday and weaving that in, not wedging it and forcing it where it's every week in a cliche, but kind of making a point over the next 6 weeks. So let's on three shows have somebody mention it who isn't even necessarily on the verge of becoming a challenger for the IC title, but just mentioning it, because when you have one world champion holding both unified belts, and as Drew McIntyre says, he's a part-time guy, it's time to elevate the two titles that are brand specific. Tom, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would not object to that. I think you want to just look at where each championship is and what's the best thing you can do in that moment to elevate it. And is it more about the belt, or is it more about the person holding the belt? And I liked this video package for the United States title tonight. Of course, Lashley, someone who's recently been in the world title picture and has come out of that phase of his career with a fair amount of popularity. It was really cool seeing people pump their fists along with his music at SummerSlam. I hope that sticks around for his sake. But yeah, this video package was good to frame this as an important championship. It's not the John Cena Open Challenge years anymore. So on the other side, for the Intercontinental Championship, I think you just have to look at Gunther. And admittedly, I'm not sure how involved Triple H was in the whole Gunther thing, as opposed to it being more of a Shawn Michaels project over in NXT UK. Or honestly, really, just Gunther, Walter being miraculously, almost miraculously being allowed to just be what he already was to a heightened degree in NXT UK and then NXT and now the main roster. He's still very much the same character. And I've said over and over again that he is, and it's no secret if you've watched him, he is a special talent. And it was just like, you know, you're just sitting there crossing your fingers like, okay, Vince does see it, right? They like when they renamed him in NXT, I was like, no, this is all things considered, this is actually good, because it means that Vince wants to make him more palatable to the mainstream audience. This is a promising sign, everybody. And so now there's until other patterns emerge, and I'm sure years from now we will have our quibbles. Right now it's all the reason to be more optimistic and to think that Gunther holding the IC title should be much more about Gunther than the championship itself, and that he can be the one who elevates it. But real quick on that, Wade, I do want to ask you, half jokingly but half seriously too, do you think that if this video package had been produced 2 weeks ago, would Harley Race be the first champion that you saw in the video?
No. But how many times did Triple H hold the IC title?
I'm going to say
I don't know.
Two?
And was he in the video?
No.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the championships, the IC title has been, and the U.S. title have sort of been, like, in my mind, interchangeable. There are times, I admit, I know someone holds a secondary title, but I forget which one it is. I forget which one is on the brand. And so, yeah, Hunter, of course, yeah, he won the title from Mark Merrill, lost it to The Rock. So I'm looking at
five times.
I'm scrolling through. These memories are flowing back as I look at the history here. And beating Chris Jericho, beating Jeff Hardy. Wow, yeah. So, and I didn't see him in
That ladder match against The Rock is just one of my favorites ever.
Yes. So he didn't feature himself, or he didn't have himself featured in that video. Now, I mean, that's good. You know, like I joked last week, that, you know, the then now to forever together video, you know, once Triple H took over, should have had like multiple instances of Triple H in it along with Stephanie. And it would have been, I think it would have been a wink to the audience. Like, we know, but it would be dangerous, because I don't know if people would think that was a joke. And I wouldn't even mature myself if they did that, but it would have been a kind of funny wink at the audience, just like take out like three or four of the legends and just put Triple H and Stephanie in there like eight times. And it's, so I think it would have been a funny little thing. Hey, I got a sense of humor about myself. And then drop it and go back to the regular one afterwards. But it could have gotten him in a lot of trouble in the meantime. But this is a subtle, maybe intentional acknowledgement. Leave me out of this, guys. Leave me out of this. I don't want people to think this is about me. And it was done to a fault with the EVPs at the beginning of AEW. You know, oh, we don't want it to be about us. And it's like, we want it to be about you. You know, like that's why there was this groundswell of excitement for this company. It's okay to push yourselves. You know, don't do it beyond your fitness or popularity, your fitness to be a top star, but you know, don't stamp it yourself. But with Triple H, he's not an active wrestler right now. So if we see more signs of him kind of dialing down, at least for a while, how much he's building up his legend, because he doesn't have anything to be insecure about. People know his history and his legacy star status. And so I think that is a good sign too. Okay. Anything else you want to sneak in there, Tom, before the next call? I have a bunch of things on my plate to talk about. We'll get to them after we get two callers here.
No, I think you're right. I think people have gotten plenty of Triple H over the past 25, 30 years, and I say that as somebody who would happily eat up a giant Triple H entrance for every single WrestleMania moving forward until he's in a wheelchair.
Yep. All right. Feel free to call. If you're live streaming our show, 347-215-8558. I'm trying to think who just called in. William in San Diego, I believe, just called us, so we'll be getting him too. Ed in High Desert, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
How's it going, Tom and Wade? I guess to your point, you said about nothing, you know, there really wasn't much negative on the show. You know, I actually thought after the show, like, I didn't feel like I had much to actually talk about either. Like, there wasn't much of a realignment. And, you know, I mean, obviously there's plenty to talk about and plenty to dissect on a, you know, in another way, but nothing really stood out as, oh, wow, where's this going? Where's that going? And that. And I also found that kind of interesting. And maybe I'm the only one, but I think the major story coming out of here is, what is Triple H doing? And if you take that away, there wasn't anything really pulling you like, oh, wow, this guy's going to be going toward Roman, or hey, look, the Usos have a new there's a new tag team coming.
And in a way, right now they are without a centerpiece world champion. Roman's based on SmackDown. He doesn't have any obvious opponent right now except for Drew, and they're just not going hard into that right now, other than the, you know, a commercial. You know, if you're not SummerSlam, it's crazy. Wait till the fallout at Clash at the Castle. But that's more than a month away, or about a month away. So I like the focus on Bobby Lashley. I like the focus on the tag team titles. I like the focus on the women's title. And as long as they're pushing the US and IC champ, you can afford to have sort of a part-time, I don't want to say absentee, but a part-time centerpiece world champion. But anyway, yeah, Tom, your thoughts on Edwards' comments on his thoughts coming out of this show. And I don't want to mischaracterize what Ed said, but is an absence of negatives, well, that's a good thing, probably. I mean, maybe some people miss the irreverence and the goofiness and the, you know, because, oh, we didn't see the 24/7 title. I wonder if that's gone, you know? So is the absence of negatives, it's probably a positive for a lot of people who stopped watching, but maybe there's a negative to that. But was there enough pushing forward? Was there enough jumping off the show that says, not only I wasn't given a reason not to watch, I wasn't frustrated, I also wasn't bored, but was there enough to say, I need to watch, I'm excited to watch next week?
And Dana Brooke was definitely a Triple H project from the beginning, so that'll be interesting. I mean, she's been around for over 8 years now. We're already seeing her as an Adam Rose rosebud dancing to the ring on NXT 8 years
wow.
back. But yeah, she was definitely a Triple H project, bodybuilder turned wrestler. So yeah, you know, Ed definitely has a point, and I've always agreed with you about the world champions not making every show, and I was totally fine when, you know, Brock Lesnar would hold the belt and disappear for a month. I like the special attraction element of that, but I think, you know, even if there wasn't
there maybe wasn't anything particularly blockbuster, and the main event, yet again, even if the crowd was hot for Rey Mysterio, it's yet another, like, okay, on a three-hour Raw, the match that goes on last is not just by default the most important thing on the show. I think that there are a lot of things that are worth investing in at this point. And then if Triple H fails us, he fails us, or if the talent does, they do. But at this point, I feel like it's worth investing in Tommaso Ciampa. I feel like it's worth investing in Montez Ford, who, like, watching Montez tonight, it was like, oh, finally, you know, we've been watching this guy for, I think, 5 years now, and he's always felt like, okay, he's going to be a breakout single star. And it's just been treading water. And tonight was the first night that I felt like I felt when I used to watch Chris Jericho and think, like, okay, this guy excites me. There's something there. He's going to rise up through the ranks, right? And, you know, he had the ceiling on him for a while until he finally busted through. And so I'm excited about Montez, you know, what Bailey's got going on. So, yeah, there might not have been a blockbuster happening tonight, but I feel like it was a promising show, you know, coming off of a pay-per-view, with the next one being, like you said, approximately a month away. I don't know. I always look at the calendar compared to pay-per-views and say, like, oh, well, you know, we couldn't have expected too much. And, you know, they can throw stuff at us anytime. Sometimes coming out of a pay-per-view is when they go their hottest to hype the new angles. But, yeah, no, I guess I found it to be a promising episode, if not one that, you know, fried your eyebrows off.
All right. Yeah, Ed, back to you. Any follow-up on that or anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, same thing. I mean, it was definitely much more than positive. I think, you know, the fact that Vince isn't there, you know, Triple H, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, with Vince not being there, Triple H is, you know, already starting at 50. And so, I mean, that makes it a lot easier for him. Just 2 points. One, a little off the beaten path. I was trying to think, like, where Brock would kind of fit in wrestling history. And I came up with the idea that maybe he's kind of like the modern day Andre the Giant, that kind of spectacle that, you know, he wasn't going to be John Cena. He's not going to be Austin because of the heights and everything they did being there, you know, every day. But he was kind of that spectacle off to the side, kind of his own thing. And maybe he kind of fits that mold of, maybe that's the best way to label him. And I think it's a fair way. I think he deserves probably a lot more credit than the negative he gets for not being there all the time.
He also might go down ultimately as the highest grossing, the highest paid wrestler cumulatively of all time. When you think about the number of years he's been in WWE, the number of years he's been making really good money, it just, you know, Austin had, you know, an $8 million year counting salary and merch, which at that point was the highest amount of money anyone ever made. Hulk Hogan rushed in and, like, said, I made 8.2 1 year. But no, he didn't. and you know, Rock's made a ton of money. John Cena's made a ton of money. I don't think anyone's had the leverage because of the UFC accolades and, the just ability to drop him in as a guy who can just make an event feel important, even if it felt a little bit of a rerun. There's a little bit of a pushback, a little derivative with the Roman thing. They sure shut those people up with the match they had Saturday. One thing Lesnar might go down as is the highest paid wrestler of all time. And that's not really answering your question. It's a little bit out of the spirit of your question, but it crossed my mind when I thought of it. I'm like, before all is said and done, I don't think Roman's going to beat him. I don't think Austin's going to beat him. I don't think Hogan, if you add it all up, is going to beat him. You know, Cena's the other person who's in the running, but I think he's got other stuff going on now, and we might see less of him. So anyway, I throw that out there. What do you think, Tom, to that topic?
Yeah, I think Brock has been very, very smart over the years, and I think WWE has been very, very smart with him, and he still, after all this time, even in, like, the umpteenth match with Reigns over the past 7 or 8 years, 7 years, he still feels like such a massive deal. And Ed, I appreciate you saying that out loud, because I've had that Andre the Giant, like, modern Andre thought before, but hesitated to say it. But I concur.
Oh, well.
Cool. Yeah, Ed, back to you.
Wow, that's good to hear. Yeah, I appreciate that. I guess, last question is, I guess, would be more for Tom, since he's the NXT historian. What are the negatives about Triple H? I mean, you know, at the beginning, Wade mentioned, you know, basically the jockish and the childish stuff is taken away, which is odd to say, considering, you know, how Triple H, you know, I think when he rose up with DX and that, and, you know, the childish antics there. But what's the negative about him being in charge? What are the negatives from NXT that, you know, everybody, all I ever hear is people loved them. NXT was the greatest thing in the world. Triple H is in charge. It's, you know, everything from this show was, you know, the world is great again. And I'm just curious, there has to be negative. There must be something out there, you know, an actual negative. Like, the best negative I could, you know, I would think of is he might actually try too much to get talent that just shouldn't be there, that isn't necessarily good enough. Like, I think Wade never, you know, you weren't particularly fond of Karrion Kross. And maybe the idea was, yeah, Kross served a purpose, but, you know, the reality was he really, you know, he wasn't that good to be there, even though Vince didn't help it either. But I'm just curious with that, and I'll go after that. I appreciate everything. I enjoy all the VIP stuff. Appreciated the SummerSlam round table, and I think it was Rich Fan who mentioned that it wasn't like Triple H was getting an empty cupboard in taking over either. So thank you, and I appreciate
it. Absolutely. Great. Thanks, Edward. That's great. First of all, I will say I was right all along about Karrion Kross. I called it every step of the way, what was going to happen on the main roster and what his limitations were and going into him being in a main event match, you know, what the ceiling was. And it wasn't that he wouldn't work hard and have a decent match, but it just, you know, it wasn't going to be at the standards that people wanted. I think my two cats know I'm podcasting because they're fighting, but they're fighting quieter than usual. they're not making as much noise. So I'm just impressed with their, with them, reading the room. As they paw at each other and chase each other. What was I going to say? Oh, so to me, if you had asked me the Monday afternoon a week ago, what's going to be one of the bigger negatives about Triple H based on his NXT run, I'd be like, well, if he ever took over creative, he would come out on Raw at the beginning and there'd be a silhouette, and then he'd have the announcers talk the Triple H era is here, as the fan had a sign in the front row tonight, Triple H era, HHH era. And he'd come out and be like, we got a new beginning, everybody. And you'd talk in that voice and, you know, Stephanie would be standing there too, maybe. And Tommaso Ciampa on the back if he got a big win, and you know, like, there'd be that stuff going on. And not that I'd 100% like feel like for sure that would happen, but if you said what's a concern you would have with him, that would be one of them, that he'd put himself out there front and center. And that's not, that hasn't happened there. I mean, and I wonder if he's cognizant of the, some of the eye rolling going on with Tony Khan, you know, the video that the narrator that called him a visionary and, you know, sort of inconsequential decisions being announced in Excalibur going, Tony Khan has just announced this. And, you know, Tony doesn't put himself on TV a lot. He's way more restrained than many, many people in his position. And we're not seeing him at Gorilla very often, you know, with his kind of emoji, facial expression reactions to things. So I'm not giving him by any means a failing grade, but, you know, there is some eye rolling with his public persona sometimes in the times he does put himself out there or has his name mentioned. Right now, it's really restrained. So I want to throw to you, Tom, on that. Are you surprised at that, given, you know, some of Hunter's positioning in the early takeovers? I think it was early takeovers, but not the later ones when we'd see more of him. Or do you think we've seen an evolution where it's actually kind of that's not where he is right now, even when he has power?
I do view him, by the way, extremely charitable of you and Ed to give me so much time to think about a very, very challenging question, because I you're like, what are the negatives of Triple H? None. He's amazing. He's a god. I love him. I let me put another poster of him on my wall. I actually don't have any posters of him on my wall, but I should. I do have to be forthcoming in that I'm just a long time fan of the person, and there's a reason why I was I am so dedicated to NXT and the developmental system that he crafted out of what they were doing in FCW. But I am not surprised that at least out of the gate, he's not plastering his face or having an in-ring or on stage, on camera presence, because even when he
was making appearances here and there, whether it was to make a big announcement on the weekly, like at a taping for NXT, or whether it was opening NXT Brooklyn, the first one that they did in an arena, in a spotlight, and saying something like "the future is now, are you ready?" or whatever it was, yeah. Or the first episode that was live on USA, where it opened on a close up of his face, and then he walked out into the Full Sail studio.
Yep.
All of those, to me, were, I don't know if giving a rub is the term I want to use, but, you know, he really has a gravitas about him and the way that he speaks. And he can go on and on and on, but he's also very effective when he's concise, and I think he's extremely conscious of his economy of words. And how he chooses to execute that. And across the TakeOver years, or across the Black and Gold years, I should say, I never felt like there was an excess or that there was a hubris. Even with the, you know, somebody wins a championship and then on social media there's the picture of him pointing to them. It never felt to me like it was about Triple H. It felt like Triple H was using the gravitas that he has cultivated over the years to help signify, like, hey, these are the people on the way up, and that was how he chose to put himself out there. And, you know, in the earliest days of AEW, before anything was either proven or not, depending on how one chooses to opine on that particular product, you know, there were a couple of derisive comments. The was it at the Hall of Fame when he called it a pissant company? But I will be genuinely surprised if he just never acknowledges it or never gets cute about it or never. I mean, part of that is a different conversation, but I do not feel that the Triple H that I perceive in backstage role, in a leadership role, is someone who is going to be having that other company at the front of his mind so much that he wants to acknowledge it and jab at it on television. That doesn't seem like the Triple H that I perceive. You know, of course, yeah, Karrion Kross. I guess Karrion Kross is a good example. And then even in a different sense, you know, Karrion Kross had a killer entrance. the word killer was on my mind. You can imagine why. But yeah, he had a really cool entrance. And, you know, and then the bell rings. I think I liked maybe two Karrion Kross matches. And one of them I would credit to him, and in all the other ones I would credit to Johnny Gargano. But there was a phase in NXT where Finn Balor and Samoa Joe and Bobby Roode and Shinsuke Nakamura and Drew McIntyre were on top, and this was also during Asuka's long streak. So, like, I'm a giant fan of Asuka. But a lot of people, including people like me who were a big fan of Asuka, got a little – I mean, I loved that she kept winning. It was awesome, and but it wasn't as exciting because you knew she was always going to win. But then on the men's side of it, the entrances blew you out of the water. Glorious, and Shinsuke with the violin and Finn crawling out in the demon makeup and everything. But then the bell would ring, and it wasn't the most exciting thing ever, and there was a pretty – hefty period of that. So, you know, there was a phase of NXT there where it was difficult for me to stay tuned in, and just the chemistry between the performers wasn't blowing me away. I don't think there's a single Bobby Roode match that anybody, you know, was telling their friends about after it ended. So as I'm reaching, I can come up with that in a vague sense. And the only other thing I can try to, just because it is such a good question and I want to have a better answer for it, but I really do admire so much about what he has
accomplished and the direction that he's taken things is just in the conference calls. You know, he is all about the spin, and he is really good at it. And you'll get some good answers out of him, and it's awesome that he did them to begin with. But sometimes it was difficult to glean anything real out of the conference calls because it was all very, very spin. And again, economy of words. He's extremely conscious of what he says, how he says it.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's just one other thing I can reach for here.
Do you anticipate a different approach to interacting with the fans and the media under Stephanie and Triple H? Because this would be, you know, kind of where Stephanie and Nikon would come in as co-CEOs in terms of deciding how to approach this. But, you know, Vince McMahon came from an era. I remember when it was just like Vince never talked to any media, and any kind of public comment, and this goes back to the 80s, was like a big deal because he didn't want to put out there until he turned heel and, you know, kind of outed himself as the guy really pulling the strings, even if as you know, media grew and the internet grew, people learned that in the 90s. A lot of people spent many years watching WWF and never knew Vince McMahon was a guy in control, and he never did interviews or just infrequently did interviews talking about running the company. I mean, I remember when I interviewed him for the Personal Torch newsletter, it was one of the, you know, it was a rare interview, and I felt like I was getting almost like something that was pent up inside of him that he wanted out, that he just had the discipline not to talk about before. I don't know if discipline's a word, but, you know, where he felt like I shouldn't put myself out there and tell my story because we're doing something else here with me as an announcer. And so he came from that era where, like, he didn't trust the wrestling media, but I think he trusted us, me, and others a little more than he did the mainstream media because he knew we were – at the heart, in almost all cases, grew up fans, understanding the business, dedicated to covering it, even if you didn't like some of our coverage and our choices sometimes and what we focused on and who we talked to and the stories that we gave time to and print to. But he didn't feel judged and diminished like I think some people in the mainstream media did, who just saw it as, you know, this pro wrestling stuff. And that drove, I think, a lot of the psyche of his media, the way he interacted with the media, and it carried over well into multiple advancements or changes and evolutions in the way that just the media was structured. And, you know, Tony Khan is handling it very differently. And Triple H handled it very differently in NXT, but had to do so within the confines of what Vince McMahon wanted. But certainly the media call press conferences, talking about the booking and the choices of why he made booking calls. He would do it in a, you know, kind of middle of the road way, not give too much away, but he would talk within the parameters of not insulting anyone's intelligence. And that's something that I pitched years ago for TNA to do. This was back when TNA was only a few years old and running those weekly pay-per-views. And I said, you know, they're going after the internet audience. Why not do a live press conference afterwards with real wrestling media and let it and stream it so fans can look at, you know, at that time Vince Russo was booking, and have Vince Russo explain why he made the decisions he made and react to how he felt angles played out and the match quality, sit Jeff Jarrett down with him. I thought that would really separate TNA from WWE and bring internet fans in and feel like they're more engaged and they're more respected. And it took a long time, but, you know, that now it's just sort of a given that that's something AEW does, and Paul Levesque did that in NXT. But, of course, Vince did not do that with WWE. He didn't do those post-show pressers. And we have wrestlers like Cody who are used to doing it and I think crave doing it. So what do you think as far as that goes, Tom, what we'll see?
And if booking somebody on a takeover is a way to signal to the audience, you know, hey, this is somebody that we really believe in. A lot of those post-takeover conference calls were to underline that. And I remember one time specifically, and I don't remember which specific time it was, but I believe it happened a couple times. There was once where Triple H did not get asked anything about the women's match that was on that particular night. And he made sure at the end of the call to say, you know, since nobody asked about that, I wanted to make sure that I put a spotlight on the women because they really achieved something tonight, blah, blah, blah. So he's got, I'll use the word agenda because that's literally what it is, but the implications of agenda, I don't intend. It's not a malicious agenda, but he has something he wants to accomplish with it for sure. So while I would be surprised, you mentioned Cody, and maybe that would be the perfect person or someone else to do something, a scrum or a call. That could be very interesting. I would be surprised if we got a post-premium live event media call with Paul Levesque, but I do expect that he will be more forthcoming with media interviews. And you know, there was it about a year and a half ago, I want to say, I think it was when fans finally started to come back to the performance center for the NXT tapings, and it was invite only at first, and now it's broadened a bit beyond that. But they put something out there saying, like, we want to work with the wrestling media more and get you as part of our takeover pre-shows. And I believe that all that's really led to is pulling in people who have done more of the modern social media, developing an online persona and brand kind of thing. So then, like, if you have a ton of followers and you tweet about wrestling and post articles on a website that has a name, then you'll come on and be a recognizable personality to associate with. So I think there's a large level of marketing in how that actually turned out, but at least that awareness was out there. So it's possible that there could be more of an outreach to media outlets like PW Torch. So that will be interesting to see. But yes, I the short version of the answer is I do expect Triple H will be more inclined to put himself out there for that kind of thing.
Yeah, and he's certainly got experience at it, and he's good at it. You know, he doesn't step on his agenda. He stays focused, but in a, I think a trans, it's clear, it's calculated, but it's not insultingly so or void of content most of the time. And before, he was having to worry about what will Vince think if he hears if I say something that creates too much attention, draws too much attention on myself, and that isn't an issue now. Ed, I can't remember if we said goodbye to you or not, but do you have anything else you want to add as a closing comment?
I guess I actually sent an email in, so I'll just say it quick. Is that at the height of NXT, they had, what, about 27 hours of programming over the course of 3 months to include a pay-per-view. The main roster has 24 hours, including a pay-per-view, over the course of 4 weeks. And that'll be interesting to see the compounding nature of the stories. And there's only so many things you can do with it remaining fresh and whatnot. And just to throw this out there, I do think it is curious who will be behind Triple H. Who's he going to groom? Because him having the heart issue, the job could become too stressful for him, and he'll be forced to step away. So it'll be curious. And you just mentioned Cody Rhodes, and I'm curious if that you always do that. But thanks. I won't keep any more of your time. I appreciate everything. Oh, and
no,
Wade,
that's great.
One more thing. Are you going to go away to be deprogrammed from your view of wrestling from Vince? Everything you I remember you saying, you know, your entire work history has been Vince has been everything is kind of bounced off Vince. You kind of have to go away now to be deprogrammed.
I enjoy your question and the way you phrased it. I'll treat it seriously and say I don't think I need to go away to be deprogrammed, but there's no question. The entire time I've done this, I've thought, even when something was happening on WCW Nitro, there was a tentacle that pointed towards how will this affect Vince McMahon? Will someone mention it to him? Will it affect what he thinks of this wrestler if they ever apply for a job? Is this sticking it to him in some way? Is this an effective strategy to counter-program what he's putting out there? And it is just something that's going to take some time. And I say it about the culture in WWE too. I think there's people in the front office who it's going to take them time to sort of, you know, be deprogrammed from worrying about saying the wrong thing. It's going to take them a while to understand you're not going to be in trouble the way that you would have under Vince McMahon's leadership for saying or doing something a certain way. And it just, it, it's going to be there for a while. It's almost like a burn-in on the screen. It's there, but it's not there permanently, and it's actually, like, really fun having that lifted from my viewing of wrestling, and I feel safe doing it. You know, I think, you know, it's an acknowledgement that that burn-in is there, but what Vince McMahon thought of tonight's Raw matters in the sense that he's still the majority shareholder, but it almost doesn't matter at all. You know, I mean, like, it almost doesn't matter at all. And the only thing I think Triple H won't do in media interviews is just throw Vince under the bus, you know, because he is a majority owner and he's married to his Vince's daughter. But, you know, and I think people are going to be respectful of the legacy of Vince in other, you know, contexts and lean on the positive. You know, he didn't get fired in shame with no power. He's a majority owner and his daughter runs the place and his son-in-law is running the place. So it's not a clean break. But for me, it's a clean break because I don't think there's much going on anymore in AEW or WWE where you got to think even for a second about what will Vince McMahon think. Doesn't mean there isn't value to thinking what would Vince do or, you know, why did he do what he did and is there something to be gained from that? And I think that filter can still be applied because there's a lot of things Vince did that were smart over the years. But yeah. Anyway, Ed, appreciate the question. Thank you. We will shift now to William in San Diego. William, thanks for calling up. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, I want to talk about the Edge promo. I feel like it's a good step in the right direction to turn him babyface, but I don't know. Like, I feel like that previous character did a lot of damage to him, and even though the crowd will obviously embrace him and it's good to see him in that role, I just I didn't buy the whole promo. I feel like it was sloppy, and you know, going into tonight, I felt like there was never going to be like a good way to suddenly explain him turning back into a baby face without it seeming like well, the typical thing they used to do all the time in WWE, you know, where there weren't any real babyface turns. There were just people who got turned on by their other heel partner or the authority, and, you know, all of a sudden now they kind of had to reluctantly be babyfaces just because they got rejected by other heels. So, yeah, it was kind of a losing situation going into it tonight, but they tried with the promo, but yeah, I just didn't think it was that good. So, yeah.
No, great question. There's three general categories that they could have gone in, Tom, with Becky and Edge. Pretend they were never jerks and just hit the reset button and hope people understand that it's a new era and we're just starting fresh. Please forgive us for not acknowledging the transition. On the other end, they could have really come up with an explanation, and I'll load this category by saying a convoluted, long-winded version of trying to talk yourself out of something that in the end still won't make any sense or will still have holes in it. And then there's the middle ground, which is, I think, what they did, which is acknowledge it so you're not insulting people's intelligence or making them wonder, really, you're going to not acknowledge that what was going on and come up with a pithy explanation. I think Edge's was a little more pithy than Becky's, for better or for worse. But, you know, Edge sort of was like, hey, thanks for cheering me. I've been an asshole for the last year. And then he just kind of moved on. I think he had to acknowledge it because he just came out and insulted people every week for weeks and weeks and weeks. And now he's expecting to be cheered. He is getting cheered. I thought it was the right approach to take, what they did, that kind of third category, somewhere in between. Acknowledge that you changed, acknowledge that you were a jerk for a long time, give not the best explanation you could give, but the shortest explanation you can give that gives people a story to believe in or hang on to, and then go from there. And I thought Edge not overstaying his welcome was good too, because I think one of Edge's faults is that it seemed like his performances were, you know, for like in TV shows, they used to have the scene of their each season of a TV show, there'd be a scene where an actor got to show their chops. And it was the for your consideration Emmy Award kind of showcase scene. And every week Edge was doing that. It's like, let me show my acting chops. And he would overstay his welcome. We didn't get that. And I thought brevity was his friend this week. What did you think, Tom?
I haven't seen too many Oscar screeners in my time, but I've seen a few, and that "for your consideration" gets plastered on the screen during the big emotional scene. And it's like, oh, well, now I'm totally taken out of it. But Woody Harrelson is excellent in Rampart. Yeah, I don't think he even got nominated for that. Poor guy. Anyway, Woody's doing fine. Yes, I went into tonight expecting promos from each and not feeling like I personally needed explanations, because both of them are such big personalities. And both of them were in positions where we wanted to cheer them all along. We thought that no matter how well they may be doing week to week, and with Edge it was a little shakier with the creative, but no matter how well they may be doing, we wanted to just root these people on. And Edge ended up resorting to cheap heat, and I even praised it because he did a good job with it, and I wasn't really liking Judgment Day otherwise, so I was like, hey, at least that worked, I guess. Old faithful. But yeah, both of them, and Becky was a bit more toward the second option that you laid out a bit, but both of them handled it very well. I had already written in my notes, like, I didn't need this from Becky when she started talking. And by the end, I crossed it out because I thought she did just fine. Edge, I did not – he acknowledged it and then moved right on. It seems like what I get from him is that his goal, whether he was aligned with them or against them, Edge, the human being's goal, is to elevate Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. And after he acknowledged that he's been different for a few months and that he's seen the light, or however he phrased it, he went right on to focusing on Priest and Rhea and making sure that they are the centerpiece of this, even if they weren't in the segment. So I thought that was the highlight of what he accomplished there.
All right, William, I'll throw back to you if you got anything else for us.
Yeah, flipping on to the other babyface turn, like I mentioned, I feel like it's been a while since we've seen someone turn face just on their own merit, just like because they knew what the right thing to do, or they saw the error of their ways and they like decided to do it. So yeah, you know, obviously I've been calling a lot of times often about wanting to see Becky turn face, and I was excited to see that, but kind of a cruel turn of events that as soon as she turns babyface, she it seems like she's going to be out for a while with that separated shoulder. Do you think that maybe the timing is kind of a blessing in disguise? Like, you know, she's kind of going off for a while in the middle of a lot of people coming into the women division now. Io Shirai or Io Sky, Dakota Kai, Bayley coming back. Seems like they're building other women up. Is this like a good thing for her, maybe? Like, she can come back in 3 months or, you know, depending on the severity of her injury, however long, and come back to a fresh women's division and be all the more over for it just because, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, as we often say.
It would be quite the spin, Tom, to say this is a positive development, but what William is saying can mitigate the negative. I mean, I reported, like, live as we're recording the SummerSlam roundtable, that I had heard that I got confirmation from a source in WWE that I trust that the Becky turn would not have happened if Vince McMahon was still in control. That was a Paul Levesque call. And I assume they would have gone through with it, even knowing that she was going to miss time. But to pull the trigger on a babyface turn and then to have her unable to capitalize on it by wrestling is tough. I'm not saying you can talk yourself into it being a positive. Maybe you can. Maybe you want to try. I shouldn't assume anything. But I'll add to the question, what do you do in the meantime? Do you have her just step away? If it's a 6-week thing or a 6-month thing, you know, we just don't have an idea yet if, you know, if surgery is required or what. But So that can change your answer too. But do you have her just disappear the way Bayley did? Or do you have her maintain a presence, you know, on commentary and you know, showing up to be by Belair's side or So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, how can we miss you if you don't go away? Of course, injuries are no good, and in that there's no good timing for an injury. But if you're comparing timing for injuries, this feels like a pretty good time. And granted, yes, we do not know the severity yet or how long she's expected to be out. But it seems to me that the long-term goal has been Becky versus Ronda at WrestleMania, and the Becky face turn, Ronda heel turn happening at SummerSlam just leads toward that. And Becky, if she's able to come back in time, can tangle with Bayley in the meantime. Or, you know, she could, depending on timing, she could have her Ronda WrestleMania match, and then Raw after Mania is when Bayley says, "Hey, you forgot about me," or, you know, there are lots of different ways that I think it could work out just fine. So yeah, I'm not as torn up about this one, because I feel it works okay. You know, so often we're, again, injuries freaking suck, but we're that much more excited about the talent when they return that it accelerates them arguably more than if we imagined the alternate universe where they continued to be booked on TV every single week. I mean, just to take a recent one that hasn't even panned out yet, so who knows? But like, I was not a big Rick Boogs fan. He was a punching bag for me any time he came up, and now I feel for the guy, and I'm looking forward to him coming back, and I hope he has success in his future, and that all of that has, you know, that's changed my outlook on him. So yeah, I don't know, maybe a weird example. It's just a recent and current one. But yeah, briefly, I mean, I again, as already stated, I loved how, you know, even considering the injury, I loved how they handled the face turn and then the follow-up on it tonight, as we already covered. But I was going to point out that it was on this show several weeks ago that I don't know if I went as far as predicting, but I suggested that this should, the Becky and Bianca should end with a handshake post-match, because they've been feuding for so long. And like, what other way could it go? The only other way I could imagine it going, as we were discussing it, whatever that podcast, however long ago that podcast was Becky succeeding, which I only put out there as an alternate idea. This was never Becky's match to win. This was always going to be Bianca's. So that leads to, there has to be something significant. And what is that? It's a handshake. It's the respect that's earned. So I was very surprised, actually, to listen to that VIP roundtable and hear you report the text that was actually a Triple H call, and it would not have happened if Vince was still in charge. That I don't know what the heck Vince would have had in mind, but yeah, it seemed like handshake was the only way for that one to go.
William, anything else for us before we move on?
Yeah, one quick final topic. you guys brought it up at the beginning, like if there's any stuff that maybe people would complain about this new era of Triple H, because I do agree that this show was really good. But you guys also kind of brought it up later, which is the two non-finishes and the distraction finish with the Ciampa and AJ Styles match. And I wouldn't say I'm at the point where it's a complaint for me, because in a weird way, even though it's a thing we've seen in WWE a million times, I kind of give Triple H a pass just because it's like his second week being head of creative. But yeah, it is a recurring thing in WWE, and it does kind of suck that, you know, you go into a show and they announce Io Sky versus Bianca, and you kind of think, this is too good to be true. Are they really going to give us a finish? And then they don't. And it's kind of a little disappointing seeing them fall into that same pattern. That's all I had. I'll let you guys go, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, William. Always good to hear from you. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, it's all, like we keep saying, it's all about that TV time when NXT was 1 hour taped, a lot more clean finishes, a lot more meaningful matches, and then it went to 2 hours live, started getting a lot more distraction and DQ finishes, and now there's even more TV time, so that isn't going to change. The TV time is still there, so they've, again, Vince did things the way he did them for reasons. A lot of them I, had to grit my teeth and agree with because I could see that he was trying to appeal to simultaneously trying to keep wrestling mainstream and appeal to a wide audience while also filling a heck of a lot of TV time for advertisers.
And one solution is have a deeper roster and don't have the same people wrestle each other all the time. But, the stage was not set. That's something I wrote in my report at pwtorch.com on Roz. The stage wasn't really set for Miz to be in a U.S. title contention when he lost to Logan Paul. The stage wasn't set for Ciampa to be granted a top six contender to the IC title status. That's inherent in being one of six wrestlers getting it. And so some of the finishes are also a product of that. I shouldn't say that they are. They might be. And if in 6 weeks, I hope, I'll put it this way, I hope Paula Beck is thinking ahead 6 weeks of what he's going to do on TV show 6 weeks ahead of time. And I know, we're rolling 6 week planning. It doesn't have to be six, it's an arbitrary number, but roughly that, where he goes, okay, in mid-September, following Clash at the Castle, I've got this in mind, and I want this wrestler to be in this match, and I want it to make sense that they're in that match. So on weeks 2 and 4 leading up to that, I'm going to insert this into the show in a way where people might not even know why I did it, but it lays the groundwork and the foundation for what I'm going to do later. And the thing is if you do that, for instance, AJ Styles gets a couple meaningful singles wins against people who you can afford for him to get singles wins against on week 2 and week 4. And they're not really storyline based necessarily. They can be, but it can be based on other things. But he gets some wins where, and the announcers talk about that, and then he can afford to lose clean to Ciampa tonight, because you're not sending a message, God, they're done with Styles. Instead, you've sent the message, they're not done with Styles. He's on a hot streak, but not everybody wins every game. Not every NFL team that wins a Super Bowl went 16 or now 17-0. It's okay to lose, but you have to have those wins leading up to that loss so it doesn't, the wrong message isn't sent. And this is, again, kind of almost filtering through the Vince McMahon way of booking, and Paula Beck gets to establish his pattern over time and recondition the audience. But right now, the audience is conditioned on, if AJ were to lose and he lost clean tonight, that sends a message that's going to upset AJ Styles fans. Let's take that away by making sure in the broader context nobody panics over one loss. But then you can do what AEW didn't do on Wednesday also, which is give Danny Garcia or Ciampa that clean, decisive win so you can sell it as an underdog meaningful victory without, quote, destroying the veteran opponent that they beat.
Yep, long-term storytelling, and for quite a while there, Triple H had the advantage of taping 3 or 4 episodes at a time, sometimes even more than that. Sometimes there were back-to-back tapings where almost an entire 2 months of television was written out at once, and they could – They were committed to the story arcs. And NXT gets accused of going back and editing their footage a lot, but having attended so many tapings, that actually happened way less than you might think, even when there were giant mistakes. There were a couple notable examples that I've talked about a lot on the Daily Cast, but it didn't happen much. So the transition to live, I felt like the mentality, they tried to keep that mentality around, but I feel like they lost themselves and they lost their own identity in trying to be competitive to the point where they had to rebrand. And that will be one of the main things I'm looking for as we move forward. And it may take 2 years before I can look back and or before we can look back and say, like, you know what? Yeah, they planted the seeds for that and they followed it through and they stuck to something. And now we are enjoying the fruit of those seeds being planted way back when.
All right. It is time for Javier.
Going down to Miami, talking to Javier.
Javier, PW Torch, VIP contributor, host of the New Japan Pride podcast covering G1 last month and this month. Javier, welcome to the roundtable portion of the post show. How you doing?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good, good.
Hey, man.
I think we had two people call you Todd today by mistake. They knew better. It just flowed.
that I was trying to stifle a cough, which is why I came out that way.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
If I get a monosyllabic Anglo name, I'll respond to it. It's fine. I'm like, I know you meant me. It's all right.
Tad. Good. That's nice to know, Tad.
we already had an issue with John earlier, so.
I know.
So it's just today. I thought it was a solid show with a lot of positive signs with some of the stuff. I actually made a list of some of the positives and negatives, although the negatives are pretty much just, you know, stuff that's baked in that's going to take time to, you know, knead out for the most part. I'll just mention when I got here, I'll pause for a second if you guys want to, more information or whatever. The first thing I had was the storylines meandering through the show, tying things together. Mm-hmm. That's something that we discuss a lot about in Dynamite, that Dynamite doesn't really, you know, promote like what's coming up later. W did it, but they did it to a fault where everything was like its own little section. And this time, you know, it was already mentioned, you know, Bailey's group running into the bloodline and stuff, you know, like meeting, you know, where it felt like there's an actual show and there are multiple people as opposed to everyone just waiting their turn to do their stuff.
I was going to say, I'm struggling over your name because I had all these funny alternatives in my head. Tom, your thoughts on Javier's comments?
No, yeah, I noticed it as well. And I've said many a time, on these post shows that I appreciate those running narratives. Just because you mentioned Bailey's group and I don't know where else I'll say it, I appreciated Dakota Kai saying, like, wink to the camera, we know how to play the game.
Yeah, that was one of my notes. Thank
funny.
You for
yep.
jumping on me. The other thing, another positive development was that this does not feel like a replay of SummerSlam, because a lot of times after a big pay-per-view, it just feels like half of the stuff that's on the following night are, you know, rematches.
Good point.
Yeah, because even the stuff, the storylines that are going to be continuing, they continue in a different way. Like the Judgment Day, you know, I'll get to that point a little bit later because that's also another one of the points I had, a little bit more on the negative side. But you know, that storyline also continued in a different way without it just being, hey, you know, we're going to book them for a rematch. So I thought that was really good. The other thing is something that I've been very vocal about, which, you know, because when I watch Raw, for the most part, I don't even watch the actual in-ring action because I just care about the stories. Because it doesn't feel like the wrestling itself is important, considering the fact that most of it's on during commercial breaks and stuff. But this time it felt like, it's like the emphasis is back on the wrestling, to the point where since I did this on Saturday, these are the last few Raws. 60 minutes of matches, 50 minutes of matches, 66 minutes, 66 minutes, 62, and today there was 80.
Wow. Yeah, I think there are people who watch wrestling because they like the wrestling to be important, the wrestling to be of high quality, but also to be important and to be framed and presented as why we're all here. And WWE and Vince McMahon's approach, sometimes by happenstance, had good wrestling, but you never felt it was baked into the soul of the show, that this show was meant for people who loved the bell-to-bell action. You'd get some lip service to it with announcers, oh, this is a great match, classic, that type of thing. But if that's why you show up, you never sort of had validated that that was enough. And I think we're seeing a change in that. What do you think, Tom?
Well, here's perhaps a Triple H negative that I can tack on to Ed's question from earlier. Going back years and years and years, I mean, even on NXT 8 years back, I've already said it a number of times, so many times in my Torch coverage of NXT programming, we get to the main event, and to me, it's the least interesting match on the entire program because it's like they give them 10, 15 minutes at the end, and it's just like, okay, the story is already told. Go out there and do your work rate stuff. And that bores me to tears because it's not meaningful. And I know there are fans who really appreciate that, but I only appreciate it if it is directly pertaining to a storyline or actively telling a story. And I very much picked up on what Javier was putting down just now about the matches being meaningful, because for a long time, and I've always ever since I first became a wrestling fan, I've always been more about the stories and the characters. And if it's just wrestling that isn't forwarding that, I'm not as interested in it. I'm not going to go as far as to say it may as well be a commercial break, but you know, it Raw in particular, or, you know, the main roster in particular, for several years now, the matches just haven't mattered on a week-to-week basis, and the finishes don't matter. And you know, coming from me, somebody who has, basically defended a lot of DQ finishes over the years, working in context, in isolation, not considered, you know, as part of the macro issue of so many DQ finishes. But tonight, I want to say almost every match, but every match felt important. Even the one that just got thrown out there to be interrupted, Asuka versus Alexa, was framed as two people who are trying to get to the title picture, and it was an interesting matchup because we haven't seen them wrestle each other in a long time. So every single match felt like something that you wanted to pay attention to. And sure, they did the first hour commercial free, but another, you read a tweet at the beginning, Wade, where somebody said, I can't find a time to walk away. And I was right there with it. Like there was no point where I felt like, oh, well, I can miss this part. So yeah, everything had some meaning.
All right, Javier.
Yeah. And in keeping with the wrestling, it also felt like the wrestling playbook was opened up. I mean, AJ Styles went for a Styles Clash within like 2 seconds in the match.
Yeah. Yep.
And the wrestlers felt important because as far as I could tell, my brother actually texted me this, and I did not make a note of it while I was watching it, but was there any wrestler that was made to wait out there for 15 to 20 minutes from the time that he got his entrance or she got her entrance and the time they started the match?
I don't think so. Now, I will say we had an hour with no commercials, which was cool, although we had a lot of SummerSlam video packages, which, by the way, I liked. But had we had those video packages and commercials, they might have been they might have jumped out more as, hey, you're eating away from the original content. And by not having commercial breaks in that first hour, it made those longer video packages on SummerSlam fit in better without taking away from that live content. But I think the short answer is what Tom said, no, which is nice. You know, I mean, I understood why they did it, but it just became comical and absurd. And there's just a better way to go about it. And, you know, sometimes I accuse Tony Khan of being insecure that if he, you know, does certain things, people are going to tune out and never come back. And that he underestimates his audience's commitment to settling in for 2 hours. And then it makes the show loses some of what it can accomplish because it's so aimed at that short attention span person who will go away and not come back. WWE had their own problem, which is, well, if we go to a break and we don't have something in progress that's going to continue, people will leave. And I think, I understand the spirit of that and the argument for it, but when you see it executed to a farcical level like it had been, it's time to reevaluate. And I think that was done, Tom.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Cool. Javier, anything else for us?
Yeah, well, now the negative stuff. A lot of this is mainly because of momentum. Greg Parks, I saw that he tweeted out that it felt like the crowd was dead for a lot of the stuff. And I think that actually has to do because of the wrestling, because the WWE crowd has been trained to not take it seriously and just wait for the angle. So, because I made a note of it that when these matches were starting, it was like deathly quiet, and it took like about 5 minutes to, you know, 7 minutes into the match before the audience actually started paying attention. Hey, look, we're getting a match. And started actually, you know, you could almost hear some faint, this is awesome chants, and people starting to get into the matches. And I think that's just because, you know, over the years, people have been trained that if it's, you're watching a Raw, a lot of crowds are just, you know, oh, we're just going to wait for something to happen.
Yeah. And part of that is too, I mean, you had Mustafa Ali, Chad Gable, Ciampa in the ring in front of an audience that has not been conditioned to believe that these are people who can win or are important. And again, that's why fully evaluating Paul Levesque's decisions now when it comes to booking isn't entirely fair. All we can do is extrapolate from clues and wonder what it will look like as after he's 6 weeks in and 10 or 12 weeks in, when he has a chance for the things he wants to do to also have the foundation of a month or two leading into it to help it make sense. And that's going to be the case with the ticket buying fans also. Getting them to react, if the fans don't react to what he's doing right away, that's not to say it's failing or it's wrong as much as he's changing course with a audience that isn't fully caught up to what he's doing or hasn't had that foundation to make what he's doing resonate as much. So I'm not too worried about that right now. And I'm sure he's thinking it's going to take more than 6 weeks to make this all, to fix everything that I think is wrong. I think it'll be, you know, we're going to be halfway to where we need to be in 6 weeks, learning what is he doing and how much better might it be even in 4 or 6 months, based on the things he does the next 6 weeks to build up to whatever he does a month and a half from now. Maybe I'm setting my expectations too high, but it just seems like the obvious thing any booker should do. And so few have done it, but I think he sat back and he has that experience, like you said, Tom, booking NXT 4-8 weeks at a time. And I think that's going to serve him well as he approaches this job, having to do live TV every week, but thinking ahead that 4 to 6 to 8 weeks.
Yes, and we'll have to allow the time for patterns to develop or not, or see if Nick Khan or Kevin Dunn tries to get in his ear and say, like, hey, this is why we were doing these things, or, you know, whatever. We will see what happens, as we always say. But, yeah, I think the conditioning was absolutely there. I mean, there were a couple times, even after the commercial-free hour, where there would be a certain beat in a match. And, you know, my brain sort of drifts because I'm like, oh, this is the part where usually they cut the commercial. Like,
yeah.
Wait, we're still back? So, yeah, yep. The conditioning is real.
Absolutely. That's a good example of it. I get that on PLEs, too. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, run to the fridge. It's like, oh, wait, there's no commercial here. Javier, back to you.
Yeah, and if they continue this pace, and for that reason, you need, you know, more people. they need more people, like, as soon as possible because – if not, I think Levesque is going to like kill the roster if they keep pushing that pace. I'm also expecting some of the storylines to be expedited so that he can get the wrestlers into the position where he wants them. Because like the Miz Ciampa thing, I wouldn't be surprised if they go through the breakup quicker than, you know, you would probably ideally develop it just if you want to, you know, have Ciampa ready for something else. So I can see certain storylines being expedited for that reason.
Sure. Yep.
And then my biggest negative is it's still a 3-hour show.
I haven't
mentioned that in a while. It's different. It hit different because it was like, you know, normally it's like, oh my God, still 3 more hours. You know, it's 3 hours. And then this is more like, oh my God, it's still 3 hours. So it's a different you know, you're different kind of tired, but yeah. So, I mean, and obviously that's not something I don't see a fix for, that he can handle. Some of
that
the notes.
Is it.
Were,
and
you know,
I've
just,
mentioned a couple of other things that, real quick, on the subject of these little minor differences that we've noticed, and I mentioned some other ones at the top of the show that I picked up on. Did you notice, Javier, or Wade, the naming of referees tonight? I mentioned it because Michael Cole kept on referring to Chad Pierce last night, or I watched it last night, but SummerSlam during the main event, and I'm not. I guess I didn't pick up on it tonight, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
No, I didn't hear it. My brother
did notice,
also,
Javier.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't notice. My brother also texted me that, and I didn't pick up on it, that Graves actually called it a title shot once.
Oh,
interesting. Yep. WWE.com said the tag team titles would be on the line, not the tag team championships. So you know, we're seeing maybe people just going, well, this fits in the headline, and I'm not going to get yelled at, so I'm going to do this.
People experimenting. Let me see if I get away with it. I didn't get struck by lightning. Yay.
Yeah. Exactly.
A couple other things I noticed, little detail stuff. There were a couple saves where the music didn't play. So the wrestler came out to make the save with no music playing.
That's a great observation. I didn't notice, and I like that change.
The first note I had was cameraman running to the bank. Wade will be so happy when they were attacking.
I'm sorry,
Becky.
Say that again. A what?
Cameraman running to the. My first note for that I wrote was cameraman running into the bank. Into the bank. Wade will be so happy.
Yes. Very good. Sometimes it's, you know, death by a thousand cuts, and this is like, you know, salvation through a thousand band-aids, like just little things here and there. It almost feels like, I don't know, you know, some people don't, but like how good it feels when you declutter your house, like, or your main area that you live in, or you know, whatever. It's just like when, you know, you put some appliances away and some just stuff that's collecting. And then you just see what's left for the, like, through fresh eyes. And I feel like there's just some sort of decluttering and just, you know, sweeping out of the room some bad habits and things that just added up to things feeling antiseptic or overly planned. And it's going to add up in ways where even you just noticing them and bringing it to my attention, it's like, I didn't notice, but I felt it, if that makes sense. And more of that, the better.
Yeah. Because the other one I for sure picked up on was when after the beatdown, I think it was the second time you see them, they're walking towards the camera, but the camera's also heading towards them. So it almost felt like they were,
yes.
You know, obviously you had a Roman camera person, and then the interviewer comes in behind the camera. Like, you know, the camera was there, called in the interview, and the interviewer came over to do the interview. So you had that moment, and I'm pretty sure we got – I don't know if it was common before because it was not something I paid attention to. You pay attention more to it, Wade, but they actually threw to the interviewer.
Yes. Yep. And again,
they never did that before, right?
Rarely, and when they did, I noticed. Like, it was just, it's a weird thing Kevin Dunn, I heard, didn't like, and so they didn't do it. And I just, part of me is enjoying, and I don't know if he was hurt in that, I assume he was, but I'm going to enjoy just like, it's just like painfully plucking body hair off of Kevin Dunn, like the things he got Vince to do. And that's just going to drive him nuts that Paul Levesque is going against it. And Levesque will have the plausible deniability. He's not doing it just to torture Kevin Dunn, but he has the authority to do it. And Dunn's got to pick his moments. And the show's going to be better, and Levesque's going to hear shows like this and be like, all right, it's, people are noticing, and it's going to encourage him to do it more. And he will not sell it, but he'll take joy in undoing a lot of these stupid things Kevin Dunn has in Vince McMahon and others have pushed for over the years. So anyway, yeah.
Then there was Booker T on commentary. which
so many words.
He was on commentary. They bring him on, and I'm like, oh, you know what?
Go ahead out here. Yeah, sorry.
If it's just one segment, you know, it's one segment. It's nice. It's fine. And then that one segment, his counterproductive ass still screwed up.
Oh.
Where there's AJ Styles is selling the injury of his arm, and then Booker T says, "Ah, we deal with that all the time."
Yep. I am not going to go back, you know, 10 years or so, and you can hear me point out every week Booker T. But what I noticed more is the strings of words that he put together tonight that had no meaning by the time he was done. I'm like, it's word salad, no nutrition, no purpose, empty calorie. It's just empty calorie commentary. I'm just dumbfounded, flabbergasted that he can say so many things that if you didn't know anything about wrestling, you'd think, oh, this guy might be saying smart things. I just don't know any better. I don't know either way. But when you know, it's like nothing adds up to anything other than extinguishing often what something is, what a wrestler's trying to accomplish. And I feel bad because I mean, I've interviewed him. He's a nice guy. He really is. And people like him. This is not out of like personal malice at all, but he is awful at color commentary, and he's only slightly better in the pre-shows. And I don't know how you're around wrestling this long and have no self-awareness of how vacuous and vapid his contributions are in these situations. I don't know how it's possible to be around wrestling this long. And yeah. Okay. I'm just going to stop there. It's been like a decade. I haven't had.
I knew there was a reason I felt Book was a kindred spirit.
Oh, nice, Tom.
I'll re-listen to Bonus Point, and I'm like, there's somebody out there who's listening to this, like, this guy thinks he's talking about something, but he has no idea what he's talking about.
No, do not put yourself in that category through self-deprecation. Booker's in a class by himself. I said hi to Booker a few years ago in person, and I was like, I mean, I don't dislike him. I just think he's awful at certain things he does and really good at other things. But when he happens to be put in a position to do what he's awful at week after week after week for hours at a time, my job is not to edit my criticism of it. And when I saw him, I just saw a look in his eye, and I don't know if I was projecting or not, that he knew. And he was just deciding if he was going to, like, you know, think, wow, that took some balls to just come up and be friendly to me. But he was nice. Anyway.
What do you make of the Montez Ford thing with them playing with, now they're openly referencing the rumors that they're bringing up?
I thought it was interesting that Graves framed it as we're hearing rumors of Montez Ford as a singles wrestler, as opposed to we're hearing rumors of them not getting along. I think those are two very different things that lead to the same place, but the paths to get there are different. The idea that Ford is going to be anxious to singles wrestle, but does so in a way where he stays true to his friendship with Dawkins, and Dawkins understands it. It's a little Goodwill Hunting-esque. It's like, you got bigger things to go do. Go do it. Not to diminish the tag team division, but just to take on something new that people think you'll be good at. I like that better than manufacturing some sort of disagreement between them. But I'm not against there being a disagreement. An errant move that plants the seed for, you know, a few things here and there, and that leads to Ford either, you know, whatever, you know, either of them can go heel on the other. And I think you can still tell a good story that way. But tonight felt, and maybe I'm reading too much into one or two comments, that maybe they're just going to go a different direction. And Ford goes singles and Dawkins stays tag team with a new partner, but they stay friends. Tom, what do you think?
The seeds have already been planted, I feel. It's very much in the is Dominic going to turn on Ray category of, like, we've been deliberating about whether or not this turn is going to happen for so long. Is it actually coming? So I think it's been on the verge for long enough. As for the actual comment from Graves, I didn't take that to be anything just in the context of the conversation about what may have been different about this edition of Monday Night Raw. I didn't take it to be something that Graves wouldn't say on any given Monday night, or even Michael Cole for that matter. I always remember when Gallows and Anderson debuted attacking the Usos, and Michael Cole references the wrestling media reports that they had signed with the company. And during this attack from two people that he should be talking up in the moment and educating fans who don't know who they are, he's just shouting, "Oh, we heard about this. We heard they might be showing up." And I'm like, dude, you just killed the moment. Yeah. So, mini rant, I guess I'm still not over that. Mini rant aside, it's, something that they've done, acknowledging that kind of thing. If they catch wind of it and feel like, oh, people must know, I guess we should act like we know too. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, Javier, anything else? I'm getting texts from the producer going, when's the show going to be over to me? When's the show going to be over to me?
not to
put pressure on you to rush through points, but.
Oh man, I have so much more stuff to say. No, that's fine. I would the change of the name, might be any change in commentary? Not necessarily they're going to replace Jimmy Smith, but like maybe like educate him more on the moves. Cause, we always get a lot of, what a move or what a maneuver kind of stuff from him.
Yeah. And then there's a replay or, you know, I keep waiting for Corey Graves afterwards to go without like calling out Smith or emasculating him or showing him up, I guess is the phrase I was looking for, you know, to slip in the name of the move. Excalibur does that with Ross sometimes or Shivani. It's like they're calling the action and Excalibur be like, yeah, that was a very good. And then he'll say, you know, a name of a move that, you know, Jim Ross is rolling his eyes at and Shivani's never heard before. I do wonder if they will set expectations for Smith to know the moves a little bit better. And some of that can be just the producer of the match going, you know, Jimmy, here are the key moves that this wrestler does that are going to be in this match. If you're not sure you recognize them, let us know, and we'll have someone send you a clip of them. Like, it doesn't have to be mean. I mean, there's just lots of moves, and Jimmy Smith isn't a lifetime ardent every week watcher of international wrestling. There's, as long as they don't treat it as something shameful, it just should be something he can get caught up on 6 weeks. I mean, he announces 3 hours a week. He's got 6 days and 21 hours of his life he's not sleeping to do another part of his job, and that is learn the moves. And hopefully Paul Levesque will make it, it will make that an expectation of his job to know more of them. You know, you don't have to be Excalibur, but you should know more of them. But I will say, I think Jimmy Smith's fine. Like, I think he's doing a fine job lately on announcing. I think he's more comfortable, not just this week and last week, but I think he's, I think he's fine. I don't think he's excellent. I'm not sure yet he's like good, but I'm not ruling that out, but he's certainly fine. Like, I think he's doing fine. And for being thrown in the spot under the circumstances he was, that's good. And he's a professional. He's getting smoother. And, you know, so I don't know. What do you think, Tom, of how Jimmy's doing?
I ultimately agree with you that he's been doing better, but then he'll say something like, "Io Sky." And I'm like, oh, this guy's just from a different world, isn't he?
Yeah.
Honestly, just give him a copy of whatever the most recent one is, WWE 2K22 or whatever it is, and tell him to, you know, do create a wrestler mode for several hours. He'll learn so many moves that way. WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy back in the day for me. But plenty of listeners are like, that's his version of back in the day. Okay. I think that Jimmy has been more tolerable lately.
Yeah. Javier, did we honestly leave you with like 8 things you wanted to get to? I mean, am I cutting you off?
No. Some of this I actually can hold to SmackDown. I was just personally hoping someone would call the Ushiguroshi when AJ Styles hit that. I'm like, nope, nobody going to call it.
Yeah.
Call it? Oh well. Where's the Excalibur when you need him? So be on the lookout for the New Japan Pride podcast. A little bit late on the last two nights because of SummerSlam, so hopefully I'll record either tomorrow or Wednesday. I'm off on Wednesday, so if not by tomorrow, Wednesday.
Cool. Javier, thanks. Always great talking to you.
Have a good night. Bye.
Yep, you too. Go VIP. Check out New Japan Pride. Good way to follow what's going on with the G1, whether you're watching or just want to stay caught up and get an opinion on it. Okay, I do want to hit a few of these emails. I encourage them and I tease them, and I want to get to, first of all, Dana from Irvington, New Jersey. I really enjoyed the show tonight. I couldn't find a minute to walk away. I was really glad to hear some NXT history when they introduced Io, and Dakota. I hope that continues so they can build more rivalries for each level. Tom, talk about Io and Dakota and what people should expect from them, strengths and weaknesses in this new higher-profile position, and do you think being matched with Bayley is smart in terms of filling in some of their strengths and weaknesses, or filling in their weaknesses and accentuating their strengths, better way to put it?
Specifically regarding Dakota, I love that she is paired with Bayley now. And of course, you know, we'll have to see how it pans out. She didn't do too much more than just sneer and make that cute Triple H reference tonight. But she's somebody who she had been squashed by Nia Jax previously, so it wasn't technically her first WWE match, but I saw her at the Mae Young Classic tapings, and she was skinny as a stick, dressed in like a rainbow of colors, with wacky short hair. And, you know, people who knew her as I think Evie on the Independents. And that was my first exposure to her, though. And you could see her dedication to the WWE style after she got signed coming out of the, or maybe even going into, I'm not sure exactly the timeline of that, going into those Mae Young Classic tapings, in how she, as we see so many wrestlers do, but as she did on a really expert level, morph what she was already doing into the WWE style of doing it in the ring, and really find her character, find different layers to her character, and develop her body more. She was one of those, like, even a more extreme case than what you see with Sasha Banks, where she takes these big bumps and you're like, oh my gosh, she's got no muscle to protect her. And she bulked up. She really did it. She was one of those people who worked on her BMI and so on and so forth, that the, you know, the PC and Coach Sean Hayes are so expertly tuned into. So it was, you know, again, like I've sort of alluded to as I'm heaping praise upon Triple H, I was widely a defender of, you know, it's weird to say the Vince years. I mean, you know, like all of Monday Night Raw history. But Dakota is one of those ones that it's just bizarre to me that you can have all this tape on her in your developmental, and then you can have her come and do some tryout matches before a couple SmackDowns or whatever it was, and still say no. I don't get that. But one of the reasons I bring up the Mae Young Classic, I can no longer say that I was in attendance at her first and last matches under WWE contract, because I happened to be at her final one as well. It's the only one I've attended under the NXT 2.0 banner, just since I'm out of the habit of going, and, you know, coronavirus and everything. But I did happen to be at that one. But Bayley, and I've mentioned this before, Bayley impressed me so much at the Mae Young Classic. And you may be thinking, like, well, she wasn't on that show. She was at the taping. All four of the horsewomen were, and they made their little, like, you know, luminaries in the crowd, you know, wave at the camera moment. But they sat there and they watched a lot of the matches, and you could see who they were reacting to. Like, I remember, it's been long enough, I don't remember which one it was. It was either Charlotte or Becky, I think, made like a cradling motion when Kairi Sane came out, because they you know, motioning that they think she's so cute. But Bayley was the one out of all of them, out of anybody, who stayed and watched every single match. And I noticed, and maybe I was reading into it too much, but I noticed that during Dakota's matches, and I think she made it far enough that she had at least three matches, I think. She had multiple appearances anyway. Bayley seemed most engaged, most visibly engaged with what she was seeing and excited about what she was seeing when Dakota was out there. And so I really took that to heart, and I've always felt like Bayley, somebody who we've seen in however many, like, the day of, or WWE 24, or whatever they call them, Bayley's always the one who's back there. She's watching the monitors. She's trying to learn how every level of it works. She's trying to cross train. She loves the business and loves WWE. and just wants to be immersed in it so much. It's felt like this has been in the making for a while, to the point where I wouldn't be surprised if Bailey specifically requested it herself, rather than it being a 100% a Triple H thing. I'm sure Triple H had more than 50% to do with it. But anyway, you know, I go on about that, but I had meant to make that connection back to the Mae Young Classic 5 years ago, 5 years ago and 1 month now. That's how long that ago that was taped. But yeah, Dakota's just excellent. Dakota is somebody who Shawn Michaels has compared to Shawn Michaels. She's excellent at whatever you ask her to do. And Io Shirai, some people might not be too thrilled when I say Io Shirai or Io Sky is solid. I know a lot of people, she came in with a lot of buzz and people were really, really excited about her in NXT. I never got too fired up about her. She had a really cool heel turn, and that was a fun story because it was done over a two-night taping, and she turned heel at the end of the first night, and so everybody was all worked up going into the second night, and she came out and she cut a promo. That was actually an instance of NXT editing their promos or editing their footage, because she cut like an 8 minute long promo and they cut it down to like a minute and a half or something. But she did some good crowd work as people were heckling her. But I think the best thing I can say about Io Shirai or Io Sky is that when the transition to NXT 2.0 was made, and so many people who had signed at the SummerSlam 2021 tryout and were really new in the WWE developmental system just got rocketed onto TV before they were ready, in the women's division, Io Sky was the one that they were putting at the center, that, you know, like Persia Parada before she was ready, JC Jane before she was ready, they were in the ring with Io Sky. She was the one that was being trusted to go in there and work with them. So that's the best thing I can say about her. Absolutely two flagship talents of the Triple H years. And one could easily argue that Io is up there among, I mean, there's so many incredible people who have come through the NXT women's division, but it could easily be argued that Io, if not being in the top five, is at least in the top 10 of those.
Great stuff there. All right, JB from Detroit. A few more creative changes I've noticed post-SummerSlam. It seems Hunter is doing what we've all been asking for in elevating the U.S. title as Raw's main title, while Roman has both and is working a lighter schedule. Two, it seems like a concerted effort was made to raise Mustafa Ali's stock, even though he didn't win his triple threat match. And three, it feels like a decision has been made and Montez Ford will be elevated on the path for his inevitable singles push. Do you have, we covered one and three. Do you have hope for Mustafa Ali to be treated better by given more of a featured role in a push from Levesque?
I'm not certain. I think as more, and it, like if someone like a Cameron Grimes comes up, that could easily mean Mustafa losing his spot. Mustafa is someone who came in through the Cruiserweight Classic, did not have much of an NXT presence, was pretty much a 205er. So I'm really not sure how much investment Triple H has there. I mean, of course, you know, somebody like a Triple H is going to look at him and see the talent, of course. But I'm not sure how much personal investment we can rely on in that specific case. And, you know, everybody shined in these triple threats. It was something that I rolled my eyes a little bit when they said, oh, we're going to get two triple threats tonight and the winners are going to wrestle each other. And I figured Dolph Ziggler was going to win one of them. Yeah, it was just sort of like, oh, okay, I don't know, this will fill some time, I guess. And then both of the matches were really good and everybody got shine, so that's good for Mustafa. I'm not sure how far elevated above what his wheelhouse had become it truly is, though.
Somebody brought up on the Twitter feed when I asked what your suggestion would be. Tyler says, give the overlooked talent a chance to sink or swim on their own merits. There's so many talented people on that roster who didn't fit Vince's vision, and this is a time to revisit some of them. He listed Doudrop, T-Bar, and Butch. I'm curious if Butch sticks around as a character. I'm fine with him in that role. I'm worried what happens if he doesn't have it, to be honest. Doudrop, I think, is at the top of people's list. But T-Bar, is he someone who Hunter can look at and go, oh, based on what we did with you in NXT and what I know about you, we can do more with you. Not saying you're going to build him up as a babyface challenger to Roman Reigns, but we definitely can get more from you. Is that someone on your list?
Yeah, we've talked about him before, and I wish I had something new to say on him. He didn't blow me away in NXT. I felt like his facials were really cartoonish, and his signature matches were that he had with Keith Lee and Damian Priest. They were guilty of being really spot-festy, and they got a great reaction, but it wasn't my kind of match. However, the one thing I always go back to was the dark main event of the NXT taping. I want to say immediately after both he and Ricochet had been signed, but it may have been the one after that. But regardless, they wrestled each other in, I didn't time it, but approximately an 8-minute match. That's what it felt like. And it was one of the best matches I ever saw in that studio. He and Ricochet just tore into each other. It was really impressive. And he was doing some strength stuff and tossing Ricochet around. It was really good. So, I mean, I believe those guys could still have that match 3-4 years later, however long it's been. Just send them out there on SmackDown to do that cold, and everybody will be impressed. As you put it, like he could be microwaved to the point of being a challenger for a less important premium live event to lose, and maybe his biggest fans will get just excited enough that they think he has a 1% chance. Just from where I'm sitting, and I feel kind of bad saying it because he, you know, seems like a dedicated guy who deserves some success. He's just not somebody who personally has thrilled me all that much outside of that one excellent Ricochet match.
And finally, we'll close with this email. I'm not going to get to all of them today. I apologize to everybody. Ryan says, Raw was a million times better tonight. I really appreciated the fresh approach the show presented with new matchups, new stars, such as Montez Ford and Bayley's group getting spotlighted throughout the show, and the consistency and logic presented that you have mentioned before would be more present with Levesque leading creative. Bravo to creative for a great post-SummerSlam show. Tom, we'll wrap up on that note, and I thank you so much. Really glad you're on this week.
Excellent. Yes, me too. What a week to be on.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for your calls, for your emails. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, and we'll talk to y'all next time.